What was that music called? It was supposed to be good study guide at this. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, January 11th, 2016. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you are listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. Our participant code is 385698. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions into questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab up on the top right-hand side. All right, before we get started, let's take a look into God's Word first. Tonight's scripture reading will be 1 John chapter 3, verses 1 through 10. Behold what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it doeth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when we shall see him, when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. And every man that hath this hope in him purifieth himself, even as he is pure. Whosoever committeth a sin transgresseth also the law, for sin is the transgression of the law. And ye know that he was manifest to take away our sins, and in him is no sin. Whosoever abideth in him sinneth not. Whosoever sinneth hath not seen him, neither known him. Little children, let no man deceive you. He that doeth righteous is righteous, even as he is righteous. He that committeth sin is of the devil, for the devil sinneth from the beginning. For this purpose the Son of God was manifest, that he might destroy the works of the devil. Whosoever is born of God doeth not commit sin, for his seed remaineth in him, and he cannot sin because he is born of God. In this the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil. Whosoever doeth not righteousness is not of God, neither he that loveth not of his brother. That was 1 John chapter 3, verses 1 through 10. Okay, tonight we got a lot of things to take a look at. We'll try to move through them quickly and get into the open forum part of our program. But we do have a lot to talk about and a lot to look at. Tonight we're going to look at territory and the problems that's going on across the nation with government and large corporations seizing property at an alarming rate. So we're going to take a look. We've got a paper we're putting together. Well, it's already done. There's one or two errors in here, and I'm going to point them out when we get to them. And so we'll be correcting that. This is hopefully going out into the mail tomorrow. We anticipated to get this out today, but it's going out tomorrow. But we're going to read it tonight. And it is posted up on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on News. On the blue bar right after the welcome, click on News. And it's number 14 in the first group of papers, number 14 called Land Grab to Congress. Okay, this is going to be filed and be heard in the United States District Court for the District of Oregon. It is We the People, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, against Sally Jewell, Neil Corners. Now, Sally Jewell is with the Department of Interior. She is the Secretary for the Department of Interior. The Neil Corners is the BLM director. So we named those two individuals, in our case here, and as we read, I'm sure you'll see and find out why. But we also named the U.S. House of Representatives and the United States Senate. These are called the defendants. This is a writ mandamus, order to show cause, and a writ centuria. The explanation of the meanings of those things are found within our footnotes. But it starts off, and we'll try to get through this quickly. But the paperwork in itself is very revealing and is an education in itself. The Unified United States, again, let me just give you one more time where this is located at. NationalLibertyAlliance.org, highlight News or click on News. And you'll scroll down just a wee bit past some of the videos we have up there and some information, and you'll start to see lists. Here's a list of the papers that we have filed in the courts. This is paper number 14, Land Grab Congress. Okay. The Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, the Sureties of Peace, also known as the Judicial Tribunal, hereinafter known as UUSCLGJ, On behalf of we, the people of the United States of America, in this court of record, under our own authority, commands Sally Jewell, Neil Corners, U.S. House of Representatives, and the United States Senate Senators to uphold their oaths, thereby obeying the Constitution for the United States of America. Duty to speak and act. Elected and appointed servants ought to answer by affidavit. Any unsworn answer is a non-answer. Any answer through an attorney is a non-answer and will be ignored. Servants have a duty to speak directly to the people, not filtered through an attorney. Elected and appointed servants, when acting within their official capacity, do not have the right to remain silent. Silence can only be equated with fraud where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading. U.S. versus Tweel. Indeed, no more than an affidavit is necessary to make the prima facie case. United States versus Kiss. Law of the land. Congress is not to make any law contrary to the Constitution. Article 4, Clause 2, also known as the Supremacy Clause. That states, this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and all the treaties made of which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state, to the contrary, notwithstanding. The key phrase of the Supremacy Clause is governing lawmakers is, shall be made under the authority of the United States. The authority of the United States is the Constitution for the United States. Congress is to make no law outside the authority given in Article 1, Section 8. They have 18 powers, well-defined, Section 8. Therefore, we the people want to make it clear that any and all laws and acts put forth since 1789, which are outside the authority given, are null and void. And Congress is now officially notified that any and all acts of Congress and any and all executive orders which would give any power or authority to fiction of law, de facto courts, are acts of high treason. Common sense dictates, as it should from the beginning and as it does today, that Congress in the making of any and all laws is to state by what authority found within our founding documents they are empowered to issue such legislative acts. An unconstitutional act is not law. It confers no right. It imposes no duties, affords no protection. It creates no office. It is in legal contemplation as inoperable as though it had never been passed. Norton versus Shelby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. 16th American Jurisprudence, 2nd edition. Where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Miranda versus Arizona. That statute which would deprive a citizen of the rights of persons or property without a regular trial according to the course and usage of common law would not be the law of the land. Hoke versus Henderson. Respondents are acting outside of their authority and are, therefore, herein commanded to obey the law of the land. If such behavior continues, the people's remedy is indictment. If you do not know the law of the land, go to nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight free courses, click on constitutional course, and take the free course. Ignorance will not be an excuse. Bad behavior. The term bad behavior means conduct that is authorized by law, and bad behavior means conduct such as the law will punish. Let me reread that because I'm not sure if I read that properly. The term good behavior means conduct that is authorized by law, and bad behavior means conduct such as the law will punish. State versus Hardin. Republican form of government guarantee. The United States Constitution, Article 4, Section 4, states, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government, and shall protect each of them against invasion, and on application of the legislature or of the executive, when the legislature cannot be convened, against domestic violence. Both foreign and domestic enemies of the United States have infiltrated all three branches of government, have levied war, seized control of the reins of our government, and set a course for self-destruction by forcing a monetary collapse of the United States, which is already in motion. And their dark work has rendered our government incapable of defending our republic. Therefore, we the people, through the common law grand juries, working with awakened sheriffs, posse comitatus, U.S. Marshals, FBI agents, and other elected servants, shall defend our constitutional republic, restore the peace, restore the land, restore the law of the land, and expose the enemy by documenting their resistance in this court of law, and prosecuting all parties for treason and numerous other charges. The identity of these conspirators have been collected over the past year, and continued being identified for indictment and mass arrests will be forthcoming. Among those indictments will be many useful idiots, elected, appointed, and hired, who presently still have the opportunity to escape indictment for conspiracy to overthrow the United States government, if they start cooperating with the grand jury now by simply obeying the law of the land, performing their duties entrusted to them within the parameters of their present positions, executing and or supporting the process of law, and serving as witness when called. Once indictments are filed, opportunity to escape the wrath of justice will no longer be available. Recent events. In Oregon, crimes perpetrated against ranchers, miners, and loggers are acts of land grabbing by foreign corporations disguised as government agencies, acting under the color of law, and reflect operations on a national scale. Reprobate federal agents, in collusion with criminal judges and U.S. attorneys, are extorting, intimidating, and falsely imprisoning ranchers, miners, and loggers, as well as thousands of American people. Government agents have set fires too. Now, there's where we had a mistake. We have government agents are setting fires. This is past tense. This is something that has happened. Government agents have set fires to homes, land, and livestock with the intent of stealing the land, thereby stealing land and resources of the people of the United States of America. Acts of terrorism and land grabbing are not limited to Oregon, but are being committed in virtually every state of the Union under the code name Agenda 21. Over the past decade or so, billions of dollars in bailouts have been extorted from the American people under the guise of too big to fail. Many American iconic corporations have been swallowed up by government agencies and international corporate cartels. An alarming number of illegal home seizures on a national scale have been perpetrated by these same criminal terrorists executing illegal mortgage foreclosures and tax seizure schemes. Virtually every government agency has been privately corporatized and monetized. This is organized crime, that is RICO on steroids, orchestrated by the bar, which has seized control of the highest levels of our government down through our legislature and our judiciary, conscripting a vast conspiracy of corrupt bankers, mortgage companies, legislators, judges, prosecutors, law enforcement agents, and those in the media, all of whom are hereinafter called subverts. Land grab plot exposed. The Bureau of Land Management, BLM, is an agency within the United States Department of the Interior that administers more than 247 million acres of public land in the United States. This acreage constitutes one-eighth of the land mass of our country. President Harry S. Truman created the BLM in 1946 by combining two existing agencies, the General Land Office and the Grazing Service. The agency manages the federal government's nearly 700 million acres of subsurface mineral estates located beneath the federal, state, and private lands. Severed from their surface rights by the Homestead Act in 1862, most BLM public lands are located in these 12 western states: Alaska, Arizona, California, Colorado, Idaho, Montana, Nevada, New Mexico, Oregon, Utah, Washington, and Wyoming. Originally, BLM's holding was described as land nobody wanted because homesteaders had passed them by. All the same, ranchers hold nearly 18,000 permits and leases for livestock grazing on 150 million acres of so-called BLM land. The agency manages 221 wild wilderness areas, 23 national monuments, and some 636 other protected areas as part of national landscape conservation systems, totaling about 30 million acres. There are more than 63,000 oil and gas wells on BLM public lands. Total energy leases generated approximately $5.4 billion in 2013. These valuable resources belong to we, the people of the United States of America, not to United States Incorporated. Today, the corporate government, acting under the color of law, illegally claims ownership of approximately 28% of the land within the United States. See Figure 1. And we have a figure here for those who have pulled down the paper. Lays out the percentage of land taken and seized by the government in each state. It shows a total land area within each state allegedly owned by the U.S. government, Inc. Nevada has the largest portion of total area seized by the federal government, a little more than 81%, followed by Utah, more than 66%, Alaska, nearly 62%, Idaho, nearly 62%, and Oregon, 53%. The supposed missions of BLM is to sustain the health, diversity, and productivity of the public lands for the use of enjoyment of present and future generations, when in fact nothing could be further from the truth. See affidavit attached, with more affidavits to come. It is just a ruse in order to sell off America to the highest bidder. President Obama, in order to push the default on the national debt out further in his recent visit to China, offered the resources of America as collateral on the debt of the United States to China. Additionally, recent discovery of uranium in Oregon creates a real concern for national security. Federal lands are lands in the United States for which ownership is claimed by the United States federal government pursuant to Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2 of the Constitution for the United States, which reads, "The Congress shall have power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory of or other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state." Whereas Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 reads, "The Congress shall have power to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such districts not exceeding 10 miles square, as may be by cession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress become the seat of the government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places is purchased by consent of the legislator of the state in which the state shall be, for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other useful buildings." Our Constitution clearly states that the seat of authority of the federal government to control is restricted to 10 square miles, and all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be, for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. The federal government does not own, but holds in trust and controls only 10 square miles and other needful forts, dockyards, and other buildings for government operations, but only by consent of the state, whereas territory is held in trust for future statehood and not owned by federal government. We, the people, never gave the federal government the power to own property, only the power to hold in trust and manage until disposed of for the United States or an individual state. Nowhere in the Constitution does the federal government have the authority to create a territory within a state, with or without their consent. Territory blacks forth a part of a country separate from the rest and subject to a particular jurisdiction. A portion of the United States not within the limits of any state, which has not yet been admitted as a state of the Union, but is organized with a separate legislature and with executive and judicial officers appointed by the president. As of March 2012, out of the 2.27 billion acres in the country, about 28% of the total was claimed to be owned by the federal government, according to the Interior Department. The United States Supreme Court has upheld the broad powers of the federal government to deal with constitutionally provided federal lands. For example, the Supreme Court unanimously held in Kemp versus New Mexico that the complete power that Congress has over federal land under this clause necessarily includes the power to regulate and protect wildlife. But this is a deceptive usage of the quote, because the court was only talking about the land constitutionally acquired, not owned, and its power to regulate and protect in trust of the people until it becomes a state. Now, there's a second error here. We have until they become a state, and we'll have to repair this, until it becomes a state. Equal footing doctrine, equality of states. Article 4, Section 3, Clause 1 reads, new states may be admitted by the Congress into this Union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states, or parts of a state, without the consent of the legislature of the states concerned, as well as of the Congress. Equality of constitutional rights and power is the condition of all the states of the Union, old and new, as Columba Company versus City of Chicago. Georgia and Virginia had ceded to the Union large territories held by them upon condition that new states should be formed therein and admitted to this Union on an equal footing with the original states. Since the admission of Tennessee in 1796, Congress has included in each state's acts of admission a clause providing that the state enters the Union on an equal footing with the original states in all respects whatsoever. With the admission of Louisiana in 1812, the principle of equality was extended to states created out of territory purchased from a foreign power. By the joint resolution of December 29, 1845, Texas, then an independent nation, was admitted into the Union on an equal footing with the original states in all respects whatsoever. Pollard versus Hagen, the Continental Congress is responding to the Northwest Ordinance on July 13, 1787, provided that when each of the designated states in the territory area achieves a population of 60,000 free inhabitants, it was to be admitted on an equal footing with the original state in all respects whatever. Conclusion. The federal government is the union of the states, controlled by representatives of both the people and the states. It does not have the authority to incorporate itself, monetize agencies, or sell our property and resources to foreign interest, like they did with the United States Post Office and the Federal Reserve, or to act outside the Constitution. All property is owned by the state, controlled in trust to the federal government. Mortgage foreclosure plots exposed. The following crime is plaguing our nation every day across America. Courts and prosecutors do nothing as mortgage holders, companies, executive non-judicial foreclosures, which means the taking of property without due process, by performing the following unconstitutional common practices. Number one, give notice of default without judicial process. Number two, give notice of substitution of trustee without judicial process. Number three, give notice without judicial process. Number four, commence a public auction without judicial process. Number five, use the aforesaid documents to transfer title without judicial process. Number six, file a fraudulent eviction acting as landlord without judicial process. The foregoing practice moves the presumption of law from innocence until proven guilty to guilty with no opportunity to defend, thereby turning American jurisprudence on its head. This removes the opportunity to be heard and provides absolute control to defraud without consequences by nefarious mortgage holders, of which there seems to be no shortage of, as well as RICO-governed de facto courts. Furthermore, Congress cannot make a law that would provide for a statutory construction forbidding the exercise of an unalienable right, which is what would be required in order to create a non-judicial foreclosure state. And therefore, no state can establish non-judicial foreclosure laws and thereby negate the following. Number one, the unalienable right protected by the Fourth Amendment to be secured from property seizures. Number two, the unalienable right by the Fifth Amendment of due process. Number three, the unalienable right protected by the Seventh Amendment of trial by jury. Number four, the unalienable right protected by the Seventh Amendment of common law courts. Rights are unalienable and cannot be transferred. Any contract that would pass or hand over an unalienable right would be null and void. The burden of proof is on the foreclosing party to prove their case, and the foreclosure party has no right to sell or transfer ownership of someone's house or property unless the case progresses to a final judgment in a court of law. Any court that ignores these facts and or proceeds with summary judgments becomes complicit to the robbery and violates the victim's right under the color of law, thereby giving reason to move the case for cause into an Article III federal district court. The ruse. Now, we laid this out. For anybody who's not looking at this, it's got different boxes as it progresses down and gives the state and some information concerning the fraud. Notice of default, not filing an affidavit of default proving due process has not been adhered to constitutes a fraud. You can't default something without having a affidavit of default. You can't file anything in a court. Trustee substitution, federal offense. Assuming fiduciary authority without filing Form 56, which is the proof of fiduciary authority under oath within the federal district, constitutes a fraud. Notice of sale, a federal offense. Acting on a claim without filing federal Form 4490, which is called a proof of claim under oath within the federal district, constitutes a fraud. And, of course, they can't fill those forms out. Nobody's going to swear to them because they don't have fiduciary authority, nor do they have a rightful claim. Title transfer, federal offense. Transferring a title without due process constitutes a fraud. Any court providing a summary judgment enters into the conspiracy under the color of law and escalates the crime to RICO. Eviction, federal offense. Any court granting an eviction after being fully informed of the conspiracy to defraud enters into the conspiracy. Federal offense. Dispossession, federal offense. Any sheriff executing a court order to evict after being fully informed of the conspiracy enters into the conspiracy. Statutory crimes. Under United States laws, securities, mortgages are illegal. Under United States law, securitization mortgages are illegal, primarily because they are fraudulent and cause specific violations, namely RICO, usury, fraud, conspiracy, forgery, robo-signing, antitrust law violations. The foreclosure crisis is a complex and interconnected series of state-sponsored crimes in each of the following steps. Mortgages are created. Mortgages are sold to investors. Mortgage payments are loaded into an international Ponzi scheme that's called mortgage securitization. Compliant judges in state and federal courts look the other way to provide summary proceedings, as mortgage companies conceal the fact that the notes and the assignments were never delivered to the mortgage-backed security trust and disseminated false, misleading statements to investors and to the United States government. B, mortgage companies continue to pursue foreclosures action using false and fabricated documents, particularly mortgage assignments. They use robo-signing, who sign thousands of documents each week with no review or knowledge of their consent, and create forged mortgage assignments using fraudulent titles in order to proceed with foreclosure. C, mortgage companies use these fraudulent mortgage assignments to conceal that over 1,400 MBS trusts, each with mortgages valued over $1 billion, are missing critical documents, namely the mortgage assignments, that are required to have been delivered to the trust at the inception of the trust. D, without lawful executed mortgage assignments, the value of the mortgage and the notes held by the trust is impaired because effective assignments are necessary for the trust to foreclose on its assets in the event of mortgage defaults, and because the trust do not hold good title to the loans and mortgages that investors have been told are secured notes. E, mortgages are assigned with forged signatures of the individual signing on behalf of the grantors and forged signatures of the witnesses and no notaries. F, mortgage assignments have signatures of individuals signed as corporate officers for banks, mortgage companies that never employed them. G, mortgage assignments are prepared and signed by individuals as corporate officers of mortgage companies that have been dissolved by bankruptcy years prior to the assignment. H, mortgage assignments are prepared with purported effective dates unrelated to the dates of any actual or attempted transfer, and in the case of trust, years after the closing date of the trust. I, mortgage assignments are prepared on behalf of the grantor who had never themselves acquired ownership of the mortgage and notes by a valid transfer, including numerous such assignments where the grantor was identified as bogus assignee for intervening assignments. J, mortgage assignments are notarized by notaries who never witnessed the signature they notarized. K, the MBS trust and their trustees, deposit and servicing companies, further misrepresent to the public the assets of the trust and issue false statements to their prospectus and certifications of compliance. L, securitization violates usury laws. Securitization becoming the resulting effective interest rate typically exceeds legally allowed rates set by the state's usury laws. M, all true sales, disguised loans, and assignments, securitizations, are essentially tax evasion schemes. In the United States, the applicable tax evasion statute is the U.S. Internal Revenue Code, Section 7201, which reads as follows: any person, corporation who willfully attempts in any manner to evade or defeat any tax imposed by this title or the payment thereof shall, in addition to other penalties provided by law, be guilty of a felony, and upon conviction thereof shall be fined not more than $500,000 or imprisoned not more than 5 years or both, together with the cost of prosecution. N, securitization undermines United States federal bankruptcy policy because it is used in lieu of secured financing as a means of avoiding certain bankruptcy law restrictions, and origins of securitization in the United States can be traced directly to efforts by banks and financial institutions to avoid bankruptcy law restrictions. And finally, securitization constitutes a violation of federal RICO, Section 1341, mail fraud, Section 1343, wire fraud, Section 1344, financial institution fraud, Section 1957, engaging in monetary transaction and property derived from specified unlawful activities, and Section 1952, racketeering. Tax foreclosure plot exposed. The county attorney, in concert with the county administrator, real property director, treasurer enforcement officer, director of taxes, and the city, town, or village judge, all acting under color of law, execute illegal foreclosures by proceeding in rem. You know, for those who don't know, rem is a technical term used to designate proceeding in actions instituted against a thing, in contradistinction to personal actions, which are said to be in personam. The main point here is it's really operates at sea. For instance, maybe a piracy situation, and they seize the ship. They're acting under that. That's called in rem. So they're acting under piracy laws at sea in order to make the seizure. They don't have to go after the person. They can go after the thing. Anyway, which is then executed by the state, an action upon the property of the plaintiff under admiralty law of one of the people who is under common law, and therefore proceeding against the owner, depriving the plaintiff of his right of due process. An act in rem against a people under a republican form of government is an act of high treason. Rem is a prerogative of a clipped sovereign state under admiralty and maritime jurisdiction authorized by the United States Constitution, Article 3, Section 2, at sea for acts of piracy. Then we have the ruse, similar to the mortgage foreclosure fraud. I'm not going to go through this, but the boxes, we have the notice of default, the trustee substitution, the notice of sale, title transfer, eviction, and the dispossession, and the final, which are all federal offenses. These are statutory crimes under United States laws. Tax foreclosures are illegal because they deny the people their unalienable right of due process. Conclusion. This is just the tip of the iceberg. We have the destruction of families and the stealing of our children in unconstitutional family courts. We have an assault upon our elderly in unconstitutional probate courts. We have the demoralization of our children by centralized education and orchestrated media support. We have huge resources being spent on the spying of Americans who are being labeled terrorists for challenging the evil judiciary that have seized our courts. We have presidents legislating through executive orders. We have the CIA instigating wars around the world. We have the IRS putting people into debtors' prison. We have swarms of federal agents on fishing expeditions manipulating people to violate some unconstitutional code in order to arrest and harass them. We have our people thrown into cold jail cells without blankets and clothing. Time and paper fails us to list all the atrocities that are being perpetrated upon we the people today. But the stories in affidavits of those atrocities, like the indictments they will elicit, will be forthcoming like a flood of reclamation of liberty. The tyrant will be cast out. In the jargon of the enemies of the Constitution ordained by the people, you are either with we the people or you are with the terrorists that have seized control of our government reins. There exists no middle ground. Make no mistake about it, there exists a groundswell of people and elected servants with full resolve and intent on restoring our Constitution and bringing to justice all the tyrants responsible for so much death, so much pain, so much suffering upon the American people, and the people of all the world, killed, injured, destroyed by the corporate-caused wars and economic collapses. Wherefore, we the people command all elected, appointed, and hired servants to obey the Constitution for the United States of America. Start cooperating in union with we the people in this great effort to save America. You have a duty to speak out on the floors of Congress and in the media. You have a duty to start removing unconstitutional acts and statutes. You have a duty to start arresting all known subverts. Congress, we leave you with the words of Patrick Henry that rings so true today, in that the war was never completely won, and we the people will finish the revolution that our founding fathers started, and we will restore by his will and by his grace nature's king into our courts. They tell us, sir, that we are weak, unable to cope with so formidable an adversary. But when shall we be stronger? Will it be next week or next year? Will it be when we are totally disarmed and when the subverts, God, shall be stationed in every house? Shall we gather strength by irresolution and inaction? Shall we acquire the means of effectual resistance by lying supinely on our backs and hugging the delusive phantom of hope until our enemies shall have bound us hand and foot? Sir, we are not weak. If we make a proper use of those means which the God of our nature hath placed in our power, 300 millions of people armed in a holy cause of liberty, and in such a country as that which we possess, are invincible by any force which our enemy can send against us. Besides, sir, we shall not fight our battles alone. There is a just God who presides over the destiny of nations, and who will rise up friends to fight our battles for us. The battle, sir, is not to the strong alone. It is to the vigilant, the active, the brave. Besides, sir, we have no election. If we were base enough to desire it, it is now too late to retire from the contest. There is no retreat but in submission and slavery. Our chains are forged. Their clanking may be heard on the plains of Oregon. The war is inevitable, and let it come. I repeat it, sir, let it come. It is in vain, sir, to externate the matter. Gentlemen may cry, peace, peace, but there is no peace. The war is actually begun. The next gale that sweeps from the north will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are ready in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is it that gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. The Court, January 11, 2016, signed and sealed by the grand jury foreman, and we'll be getting that out tomorrow morning in the mail. Okay, a couple of questions before we move on, and I'll pass things over to Gerard in a few minutes, but we had some questions mailed in. I'm going to try to go through them relatively quick. Let's see. Is the violation of right of due process a law limited to judicial functions, or does it also apply to unlawful legislation lacking any legitimate derivation of authority from we the people? Yeah, anything that you can't trace back to the authority, which is the Constitution. And that is key to everything people must understand. We had a discussion with some people recently, and they were talking about a contract that was made with the government over land, and that the land, that they signed away certain rights and certain things, and the government did certain things. But the government broke the relationship anyway and then started to go after them. But they were still acknowledging the contract. But the government didn't own the land. They were acting under the color of law, so there was no contract. So everything from that point forward is null and void. It's irrelevant. It means nothing. So any contract that was signed thereafter or applied to thereafter doesn't affect the situation. If you cannot trace any action, any law, any legislative action, any judicial action, even administrative action, if you cannot trace that action to an authority in the Constitution itself, then there is no authority for them to operate under those conditions. I venture to say, and this is probably a low number, 90% of what our government does is unconstitutional. And I think that's a low number. They do everything and anything they want. The courts are totally out of control. They don't even obey their own laws that they put together to help, seize our property and just take away everything from us. So it is a process. It is a problem with the due process when a government comes out after us for anything that they shouldn't be coming out after us for. Okay, I was looking up the Latin word phrase on the top of NLA's page and came across an old smear piece that had a lot of information wrong or irrelevant. However, it did make the point that common law grand juries wasn't established in the Constitution, and that interests me. It makes a passing reference to them, but doesn't establish them. Did the grand jury start with the Magna Carta? Or, specifically, I want to understand where they derived from so. so I can be confident that having them as a judicial means of remedy will be utterly valid, and that the decision will stick because the means of the judicial remedy is completely solid. Okay. The first grand jury that we know of in history happens in the Magna Carta, and it was the people who called the grand jury. 25 people came together to take the head of the king, or he would sign the paper, one or the other. And that was the first grand jury. They later established that four individuals would come together to solve any problems between the people and the king or the people and the government. And if those four individuals, which we were looking to set up the administrations within each county, four individuals, if those four individuals couldn't settle the problem, they would then take it, like a prosecutor, they would then take it. We, the people, would take it to the grand jury. The fox doesn't get the opportunity to choose the grand jury. We, the people, choose the grand jury. We can't give that authority to political judicial powers. We just can't do it. Right now, they have the power of judge, jury and executioner. They got total power. Anybody going into their courts is like a lamb going to the slaughter. You just can't make it through. They control the jury psychologically. They give them psychological questions. They know exactly who to pick for what cases and who to get rid of that they don't want and so on. So they control the jury. And then they ruin the grand jury by coming in and telling them how they got to go and rule as far as law is concerned. When the grand jury gets to decide, the trial jury gets to decide both the facts and law, they also get to decide what the remedy is. But anyway, as far as power and authority, it does come from the Magna Carta, and it's better, it's expressed in United States versus Williams, a 1992 case, which I'm just going to read a few excerpts from. The Court of Appeals rule would neither preserve nor enhance the traditional functioning of the grand jury that the common law, the Fifth Amendment demands. The common law of the Fifth Amendment demands, because the grand jury is an institution separate from the courts, over whose functioning the courts do not preside. We think it clear that, as a general matter at least, no such supervisory judicial authority exists, and that the disclosure rule applied here exceeds the Tenth Circuit's authority. Rooted in long centuries of Anglo-American history, the grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of buffer or referee between the government and the people, just like we saw in the Magna Carta, set up the four. Although the grand jury normally operates, of course, in the courthouse and under judicial auspices, its institutional relationship with the judicial branch has traditionally been, so to speak, at arm's length. Judges' direct involvement in the functioning of a grand jury has generally been confined to the constitutive of one calling of the grand juries together and administering the oath of office. The grand jury's functional independence from the judicial branch is evident both in the scope of its power to investigate criminal wrongdoing and in the manner in which the power is exercised. Unlike a court whose jurisdiction is predicated upon a specific case or controversy, the grand jury can investigate merely on suspicion that the law is being violated, or even because it just wants to make assurance that it is not. It need not to identify the offenders it suspects or even the precise nature of the offense it is investigating. The grand jury requires no authorization from its constituting court to initiating an investigation, nor does the prosecutor require leave of the court to seek the grand jury indictment. And in its day-to-day functioning, the grand jury generally operates without the interference of a presiding judge, and it swears in its own witnesses and deliberates in total secrecy. So And in this case, United States versus Williams, I mean, it just goes on and on and on with certain powers and authorities of the grand jury and so on. So people should read that, United States versus Williams. And it also gives tremendous amounts of references to cases and, you know, and history and so on. So there's a lot of history and a lot of Supreme Court rulings concerning this. And again, you find it in the Fifth Amendment. Nobody can be convicted of a crime. Nobody has to answer to a crime without first going to a grand jury. So you have to, the government has to go to the people and ask the people, can we have an indictment? And the people will decide whether they will or won't. But right now we have puppet grand juries in their system, and that's a major problem. Okay, let's see. One other question, and we're coming to an end here. I'm reading a booklet, Common Law Community Training Manual, in which they explain how to start common law court. It is issued by the International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State, Brussels. Does NLA support this booklet? NLA supports no known booklet. We have looked in, at a lot of different things out there that have been written by many people over the years, and so far we've found nothing that really frees the people. They all seem to be getting caught up into different things at some point and ends up into control. And that is why we really want to teach the people to think free, to be free, to act with the principles that God has given us and commanded us to act under, sense of honor, sense of justice, sense of mercy, to take an oath to Him. And we're putting together basic processes or kind of, you know, rules or processes to go through that people will have to execute themselves, but we have to free the people. We can't bind them down with words and rules and requirements. We've got to be very careful in how we approach this. But we are working on a book ourselves in order to deal with this problem. But we have found nothing yet that we would agree with yet at this point in time. Okay, I think, let me see, I think that brings to the end of this. Gerard, you out there? Well, let me just make a few announcements. Is Carl out there? Carl, are you in here? Let me just open. I'm going to go open up Q&A. I don't want anyone to get into Q&A. I don't want anyone to get into Q&A. Carl, if you're here, can you please get into Q&A if you if you're not in here as a host? Get into Q&A. Basically, our course is up and running. It's the constitutional course. People can take it. I think, is that you, Carl? You've been unmuted. Is that you, Carl?
No, that's Les in Schuyler County. I wanted to ask a question.
Oh, okay. Hang on. All right, let me clear the queue. I'm only looking for a couple people right now. Carl, if you're here, get into the queue. All right, anyway, if Carl's not here, basically the course has been started. I was up looking at it just before our program started tonight. It looks really nice. It's nice and clean. It's been tested. We haven't found any, you know, we've fixed all of the bugs and everything. We don't think that there are many or any bugs in it. If anybody discovers any bugs, you'll want to bring it to our attention. As soon as possible, you can get a hold of Carl at nationallibertyalliance.org or Gary at nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll repair that problem. Let's see. We're looking for district leaders. We still need district leaders. What we want to do is we want to structure. We have enough people that we can easily structure district leaders in all one leader in all 94 districts. And we'd like to get two or three or more district leaders, but at least one, okay? And those leaders will be responsible for really working the structure of their state, building up membership and getting people focused and to the meetings, and also going through the process of learning the Constitution, taking the constitutional course and our civics course. Our civics course is quite long. It's a 120-hour course, mostly a lot of video and a lot of audio and then some questions. But a constitutional course is much, much quicker. It's 100 pages. It's all reading and answering questions, and it's done in sections. It's broken up into you got an introduction, I believe 12 chapters, and then a conclusion. So that would be about 14 chapters, 14 sections. And each has a series, you know, a number of questions at the end of each chapter, anywhere from 8 to maybe 20 questions. And I think it's a very good course. Once you go through this course, you're going to be hitting yourself in the head or kicking yourself in the rear, wondering why you never picked up the Constitution before to read it and realize on how simple it really is. It's simple writing for simple people. It's the people's book. We don't need a professor to tell us what this means. We don't need any attorney to tell us what this means. This is plain language. So we need to really get into this and understand this Constitution. If we expect to be ignorant and free, as Jefferson said, you know, forget about it. It's not going to happen. Okay, so we're looking for district leaders. Please, anybody who would like to take on a leadership of the district, 94 federal districts, and then we're going to build down from there. We're going to organize the state. The federal district leaders will be working with the state coordinators and organizing the counties and trying to get membership in counties we don't have membership in and working towards those four coordinators and also preparing a reception committee, so to speak, nationwide reception committee, to receive the flood of people that soon will be pouring into National Liberty Alliance. Once we reach that point of critical mass, we will be flooded with people, and we will need to control those people because some of those people will be coming very angry, and they want to maybe act with vengeance and anger, and maybe doing the wrong things. You know, we have to train them to be principled. We have to train them to come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. You know, all of us, we have to be brought to those points of view. And we've been working at that together for a couple of years here now at National Liberty Alliance, and I believe we've built a lot of integrity, and we've built a proper structure in order that we would exercise and execute the principles that God requires us to live in. So, Gerard, are you here? Mr. Gerard?
I'm here.
Oh, good for you. Okay. I'm going to pass it over to you in a minute. We have Tim from Alaska in the queue. Anybody else that has never been on the mic before or hasn't been on the mic in a long time into the queue, nobody else into the queue for maybe about 30 seconds or so. And let's get the people in that maybe last week didn't get to ask their questions. Maybe they were waiting a long time. And again, new people who've never asked a question or people who's been a long time. All right, I'm going to pass it to you. I'll kind of jump in and out. I know Tim has some questions. Maybe you can answer them, and maybe I'll respond some too. But you got it.
Okay, I'm going to unmute Tim. Hello, Tim. Welcome.
Hello, and this is Gerard. Is that how I heard your name?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, how do you do, Gerard? And John, that was excellent, really good. And John, if you're listening, you've invited me.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, you've invited me to call you at your convenience, and I'd like to have a time that is convenient for you for me to call.
Well, the best time is maybe, let me look at tomorrow's schedule here. Tomorrow's Tuesday. I'll tell you, probably noontime my time, 1 o'clock my time is probably good for me, which would probably be about 9 o'clock your time, I think. Oh, no, well, you're in Alaska. What are you, 4 hours?
Well, 9 o'clock would be good for me, John. If that's good, then I will call then.
All right, that's good.
Okay, and I guess here I wanted to I'm gonna apologize for coming in early on this. I don't have experience with these. I don't even use the right technology, TalkShoe or whatever. But I certainly do appreciate the opportunity to. And again, John, that was just awesome. So I've been keeping notes as fast as I can, but I'm gonna go to the website and I'm going to register. But here's one thing that just kind of sticks in my mind. If we, in fact, do facilitate sitting grand juries, you know, what building are we going to use? The one that they have downtown with all their paid mercenaries there? And I'm not trying to show disrespect. I cast disparity on no one. specifically, but for this question, I mean, would we somehow be able to, with the force of what we're doing, actually use that building? That's kind of my main question. And then I've read the disclaimer on your homepage there, and I do believe I understand it pretty good. And I did concentrate on understanding contract law, UCC, the power of the commercial lien. And my family and many of us observed and noticed that they came out here in this state that anyone trying to perfect a commercial lien is considered a paper terrorist. Now, they can say whatever they want, and they often do, and that's the problem. And I'm absolutely putting that on the shelf, and I understand where you guys are coming from. And so I just wanted to say that. And I am, John, again, too, very much interested in talking with you tomorrow and seeing what kind of leadership has materialized up here. But I just wanted to say another thing that, you know, there were counties in Alaska that were created on paper, you know, maps at the BLM at the time of statehood shows where they were to be. But they were never occupied. So we have boroughs. I mean, I don't know if that's the case in other states or if it even matters. But
well,
it does seem a little confusing.
Just to comment real quick on the boroughs, and I'll let Gerard, maybe you want to comment on everything else, but on the boroughs themselves, down in New York City, we have five counties. New York City is broken up into five counties, and they're referred to as five boroughs. The boroughs are the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, and so on. And so boroughs and counties really are synonymous. It's the same thing. It would still be counties. Now, it's territory that's up there, and but now that territory is no longer territory. It is now, they've created a state out of all of that territory in Alaska. So all of that belongs to the people of Alaska. That is your sovereign state. Now, if the government wants to assist in areas in your land and there's resources to be drawn out and you need federal assistance to draw out the resources, and this is the people's resources because we're all Americans, we share our resources one state to another. You know, each state has its own type of resource, and it belongs to all of us. We share that. Then that would be appropriate for the state to contract an agreement with the federal government by the approval of Congress in order to bring forth the resources out so that we, the people, can use them. That would be appropriate. But they cannot turn that land into a territory. You know, we read in the paper that we're reading tonight, we read the definition of territory, and the definition of territory forbids the ability of land, a state being taken a piece within it as territory. Let me read that. This is Black's Law, 4th edition. Territory is a portion of the United States, not within the limits of any state. You see, right there is the key, not within the limits of any state. Which has not yet been admitted as a state of the Union, but is organized with a separate legislature and with executive and judicial officers appointed by the president. Now, these territories that these people are cutting out, there is no organization with separate legislators. There is no executive and judicial officers appointed by a president to accommodate that area, first of all. And second of all, the most important point is that, again, it is not within the limits of any state. So Alaska owns all of it. The people of Alaska, that's your state. It's your resources. And, of course, as a union, you're committed to share those resources and trade those resources with the other states. And the federal government is there to make sure that that happens, that there is no restrictions providing and allowing for the movement of resources from state to state.
Well, hallelujah.
So let me let Gerard answer the rest of the
Oh, that was great. Yeah, and then the thing about the courthouse, the buildings.
Yeah, you want to answer that one, Gerard? Did we lose you?
John, just the strategy here, and it's, again, I'm going to, this is all going to become clear once I get going on these courses and stuff.
Right. Hey, Gerard, you there?
He will be right back with you.
Okay. All right. I'll pick up on the question. Yeah, those courthouses belong to us. We paid for those courthouses. We built those courthouses. We pay for the electricity. We pay for the fax machines, the telephones, the lights. We pay the salaries. We man them. We've elected people to get in there, to control them, to direct, and that belongs to us. Now, we have a de facto court system in there ruling under what's called chancery law. That's the problem we need to recognize. So they've robbed the jurisdiction. These people are subverters. They're subverting the United States of America. They're subverting we, the people. And they've robbed us of our jurisdiction. Whenever we walk into those courts, they move us into a chancery jurisdiction, which makes them king. They give us summary judgments, which is unconstitutional, unlawful in any common law court. And they've shut down the common law court. If you talk to a lawyer or a judge, common law, that's passé. We've done away with that a long time ago. That's a lie. Then we've done away with the Constitution. So maybe we have done away with it because, after all, we're not using our Constitution. But we, the people, are not going to permit that. We need to step up, and that's what National Liberty Alliance is all about. We need to step up and take control back.
Hallelujah, John. And now, when Bob Sperlino, who may or may not be listening, he referred me to John, who I've sent an email to. And I would just say this, John, to you, that whatever sort of grand jury has already possibly been convened in this state, I'm on an island, on Kodiak Island, which is 250 miles southwest out in the Gulf of Alaska from Anchorage, which is the main population center. But I guess, again, John, I'm going to absolutely get up to snuff on this, and these questions I'm sure will be answered. But just for tonight so I can go talk to my attorney, son, it would be our courthouse here would be a perfect place to have a grand jury. It might be more appropriate in Anchorage, because I'm sure anything that these grand juries take on are extremely important, and the larger the venue, the better. But that's just my own thought.
Well, in order to win back the courts in America on every level, we first have to win back the courts on the federal level. There are 94 federal districts. We have to win back all 94 districts. If we win one, we win it all. Okay, because by winning one is just as, it's the same law here as it is over there. It's Constitution. So once we get in, and that's where we're spearheading. Right now, it seems that all the action is out in Oregon right now. And so we're putting everything out that way. We're developing ties with the people out there. We've got communications. We have people heading out there to participate as far as communications only is concerned, in order to reflect what it is that we can do for these people, what we've done for the Hammonds, what we'll do for even the Bundys, and we've been communicating with the Bundys and others. And so our work is being worked done under the name of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. Now, we have reconstituted the grand juries in every county in America, 3,143 counties, and it took us over two years to do that. After we reconstituted all of the counties, which is very simple, just putting ads in the paper and bringing the people together and saying, showing them a couple of, 10, 15 minutes tape or video on what the grand jury is all about, what we need to do, what the common law grand jury is, and then we take a vote, and it's been almost unanimous everywhere we go. I mean, if we get one or two troublemakers here or there, because that's usually what they were, people who would be troublemakers trying to destroy our work. It's been unanimous. And this includes Alaska, and it also includes Hawaii. Now, after we done that, we then organized each of the states, and we developed a unified state common law grand jury in every state. So we do have a seal for every state of the union. We have an address for every state of the union. But it is agreed upon and necessary to act in one accord to take back the courts. We have to first take back the courts before we can hear any cases and then do the work within the counties, which is what the people should be doing. But in order
awesome, to John.
First
Absolutely
have to
awesome.
Take back, we have to take back the federal level. So we're acting in one accord. All unified state common law grand juries are connected and have come part of one unified United States common law grand jury. Last time we had a meeting, we had over a couple of hundred people who attended for the purpose of making decisions. And so, and we do that, of course, online here because we're all over the United States. So we have 13 papers filed in 94 federal courts in every single one of them. We don't file one paper in one court. We file one paper in all 94 courts 13 times. And that's what we're doing right now. So we're filing them in every court. This case that we're filing now is going to be pointed specifically towards Oregon, but we are filing it everywhere. And so we're fighting to get into the courts to get a presence. We're building up momentum. We've got a lot of people behind us. We have name recognition, and we continue to build our membership. We're getting the ears of sheriffs, FBI agents, marshals, and even elected officials. And as time goes on, we're going to get in there and start making some arrests. It's a matter of reaching that point of critical mass. And we're very close to that. And this issue out west may be the very issue that may bring us to critical mass.
Well, I believe it is, too. I haven't really kept up to snuff on that, but my family here, we're starting to. And John, I'm gonna let other folks have some time here. Absolutely appreciate everything you've done here and that you're doing, and I look forward to speaking with you. So thanks to all of you folks, and my prayers are with us all.
Hey, thank you, Tim. Gerard, you back?
Yeah, I'm back. I thought I could sneak away, but you caught me.
I know. Take the helm.
You know, one of the reasons we don't end up with problems is because we don't open up other buildings, because we operate in our courts. And that's one of the reasons they can't bother us. You know, if we operated in a back room and opened up a court and opened up a jail, boy, they would make us be terrorists in a heartbeat. And I'm not saying that we couldn't do that legally. I mean, you know, technically, you know, we could operate in a tent outside of the court if we had to, you know, like John says, desperate times call for desperate actions. But like he said, when we go in there, we lay the groundwork for the court that we're in. We proclaim that in the headings of our papers. And, you know, they never questioned it. Either too stupid or they don't want to go there. So, you know, we're operating in those buildings that we paid for. And I believe that's part of our success, because we're not in some back room where they can make us look like a bunch of subversive, you know, commies looking to overthrow the government. And that's important.
Okay. Well, hallelujah.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, like your little town courts and things like that, they're called nisi prius courts, which means they have authority unless objected to. You see, you contract yourself into there by answering them. Pleading there. So I guess you understand that. So,
yeah, I do. I understand contracts, and when I was reading the disclaimer on the homepage of the site there, no way did it come across to me that you folks don't understand contracts. Absolutely. That's not what you're saying, and I understand that.
Well, you know, they want to use little magic words, and they think they're contracting you, but it's all fraud, really, and that just makes it so they can sleep at night, because they feel like, well, the stupid person didn't know that he agreed when I said, do you understand? It meant, do you stand under our authority, right?
Right.
And that type of stuff. But that's all going to go away. That's one of the things that we're going to dispel, and those little tricks don't work, because just with the paperwork we're given already, we've already put that to bed.
Hey, let me just leave you guys with this thought. If you've ever even just kind of dreamed of Alaska, my wife and I have lived here 35 years, and it is absolutely the most awesome culture in Alaska, and there's many different cultures. Kodiak, if you look at the history, boy, it was the very, I mean, just the natural history and the natives' history and the history of commerce and the military here, I mean, it's really quite unique. And I really think Kodiak right now, with the activism, it's the only thing I can think of to call it, it is really a good place to have some leadership come to the top here. And, you know, I'm not talking about personalities battling. I'm just talking about, you know, that everyone has something to give. But absolutely, the way you guys have organized this, I'm going to take you up on this on both courses, the Constitution and the civics. And, you know, I have my own business, you know, I'm a big game commercial master guide, and I do take people from all over the world on various adventures here. And I have young men that work for me, and I mentor them and want to keep them excited about the culture and their life, try to be positive. You know, and I just tell them leadership. I mean, leaders, you know, they're the first up. They clean the toilets at the meetings. They're, you know, they wash the dishes. They're the last to go down, and it's a tough job. But, you know, it's just like you're saying, the courtesy that we have to listen to each other, because everybody has a story. But I think the highest common denominator is certainly going to come out in this one instead of the lowest. And so, anyway, again, I'm gonna go now. And again, to everyone that's listening here, I really, really enjoyed hearing you, John. And so, I'm gonna say good night to you. And thanks a lot. Okay.
Thank you, Tim. Nice having you.
All right. Same here.
Yeah. Okay. We're gonna unmute South Carolina. Scott, you've been unmuted.
Yes, this is Scott from Somerville, South Carolina. I just had a couple of things. One, I had kind of put this out in the email that got out, but I was looking at a couple of different things, and one of them was how to own your land in Allodium. And one of the ways it said was to pay for it in lawful money. Now, the difference between lawful money and what we carry is ours says Federal Reserve note, and lawful money says United States note on it. It is not elastic as such as, the note is. But then I was reading another article where it said that actually all you got to do is take a notary with you, and when you make a house payment, just pay $50 in lawful money.
Look, all of that is part of the fraud. That's the problem, this whole thing. Look, they removed the allodial titles for a long time ago. There are some people who still hold what's called the allodial titles. And it's only a matter of us stepping up and saying, hey, all that is a fraud. Go down to the town, put your property back to private property and tell them to leave me alone and don't send me any more tax bills. Now, that's an uphill battle, but trust me. And we are working out a process for people to go through right now. But we're not going to really get too much anywhere with that until we actually get back to courts. And once we get back to courts, then we're going to give the property back to the people where it belongs. And we have to jump through no hoops. Automatically, your property belongs to you. And all of these illegal foreclosures and everything, you know, when the people come up, they're looking to get remedy because they were robbed. Well, I'm sure the grand jury is going to work that out, and if they can't, they're going to send it into the trial jury, and the people are going to get remedy. They're going to get their homes back. They're going to get their property back, because enough is enough. And as far as the debt goes and is concerned, look at if China wants money and any other country that has put money out there, first of all, the United States have been carrying nations for 150 years, okay, since World War II. We've been carrying nations. We've poured huge amount of money into countries and never asked it back, and we're still funneling money to all these countries. But beyond that, laying that aside, nevertheless, they want their money back. We want our money back, too. Let's go get the people who robbed us. Let's go after the Rothschild, the Rockefellers, all those people. They've got all the gold. Let's go after the Federal Reserve. That's where all the gold's at. And let all the countries get a piece of that, take it back what was rightfully theirs from these criminals who belong in jail.
Well, I was also looking at something that kind of you were alluding to about pouring all the money out into other countries. Basically, what's happened is, through the United States' arm twisting and the petrodollar, they have basically set up 99% of the countries in this world have central banks now, and they hold dollars as reserve currency. And what's happening over in Iran and places like that, Syria and all that, is they do not want to hold the petrodollar. And they want to use, you know, other means. And, you know, the United States is not going to let that happen, because if China and Russia create a new currency that will, which they're already trading it for oil, they're not even using the dollar, then the other countries might catch on and come and want to cash their dollars in. Our dollar will crash. This almost happened in the 70s with Germany wanted their gold back, and they wanted to trade in their reserve currency. And Nixon took us off the gold standard to stop it so that they couldn't get gold for their dollars. And it's been like that ever since. You know, and the gold they did, they got 10%, and it was seeded with tungsten. So, I mean, you know, I don't know what we have, but it can't be much.
Well, look, it's all part of the grand scheme, and they've been, everything you learned was a lie. You know, the debt and everything else, they've designed this country to fall. They intended to collapse us. The IMF wants us to collapse. They used us as a stick to beat the rest of the world, send our economic hitmen in, bring them under these loans, give them loans that they couldn't possibly pay back, ruin their countries, take control of them. But ultimately, they need to get rid of America, because America is the last thing that's standing in their way of taking over the world. So
let me ask you real quick before I get off of here. I lost my line of thought, but from what I understand, the dollar, I mean, it's going downhill pretty quick. From the time the dollar was created in 1913 till now, it's like $27 to buy what a dollar would buy back then. But anyway, with the new currencies that are coming about, and especially, like, you know, other people are trying new currencies like Bitcoin and things like that to try to get away from the hold the United States has on everybody. But everybody's going to start, fighting back. I mean, I don't think we have much longer. And, you know, if we don't get into the courts, then we may be under some kind of state of emergency, which I know the Constitution still applies. But, frankly, I seriously don't.
That's up to us to hold that up. And look, if the dollar doesn't end up being the world's reserve currency, that's okay, too. We can survive without that. That's just a tool that they use to control everybody, to have unlimited money for themselves. Look, at all the central banks are leveraged about 80 to 100 times. The IMF is the only bank, the World Bank, the Bank of Settlements, only has about one-third debt. So they are in a position to bail everybody out, and that's what they want to do. They want to take control. But that's not going to happen. I don't believe it's going to happen, because I think that at the 11th hour, the people are going to step up, and we're going to return it back to a real currency. And I don't even care if we don't have money, just as long as there's value behind what we're doing. You know, you can't have this fiat currency and this Keynesian thing where you think that you can bar yourself into wealth. It isn't going to happen. It never happens, and we're reaping the results of that. Now we hit a brick wall. We can't borrow anymore. But I want to move on. We got a lot of people. So,
well, thank you. Just real one quick comment before we go, though. Last Monday, which was the 4th, it was the first meeting we had of the year, and we started off with Campaign for Justice. So that's where what we expect. Campaign for Justice 2016. Our goal this year is to get into the courts, and I do believe we're going to get into the courts this year for a number of reasons. We have reached a lot of goals. Every goal we've set for ourselves, we've reached. We are at that point. We're well organized, a lot of things going. We do need more leadership. We need more leaders to take positions. We've got lots of committees. We've got information flow. We've got contacts. We're reaching out to other liberty groups. Other liberty groups are discovering us. We're working with problematic situations in the nation. We've got lots of papers in the courts. I believe we reached what's called terminal velocity, okay? And when that point reaches critical mass, which is what we're looking for, that point in time when people flood in, that's when we're going to take the courts back. And that time, I think, is very, very close. Very close. And I believe it's going to be 2016.
Well, I appreciate you giving me the time.
All right. Thanks for your call. You there, Gerard? Thanks for your call. You there, Gerard?
Oh, I'm talking. Thanks for your call. You've been unmuted to your mic. Oh, my mic. It's a good thing you didn't hear me. No. Okay, New York Mike. Mike,
you've been unmuted. How are you guys?
Good.
All right. The most common question that comes across my mind lately is When I try to get help, when I talk to people in my community about this, the first thing is fear. What can I tell them? How are we going to protect these people?
Look at it. That's because they've been trained to fear.
That is true.
We're all well-trained little slaves. And who was it? He said, we got nothing to fear but fear itself. That's very true. Most of what the government's doing to us is kind of smoke and mirrors. It's psyops. And it's all because it's self-policing. If everybody stopped cooperating and everybody did the right thing, you know, and stopped turning their neighbors in and police started protecting and serving instead of violating, it would fall overnight. And they like this fear. And I don't even like to mention it because it gives credibility to them. You know what I mean? I believe in the positive affirmations, you know. Don't even mention it and negate it. Negate it and don't pay attention to it, you know. I mean, look at we're David and they're Goliath, and we got that little stone that's going to go right in their temple. And it doesn't matter how big you are, when you get hit in the temple, you fall down. And that's where they're at. They're ready to fall. And the reason they're going to fall is not only because we're here, it's because they've gotten so top heavy and so incompetent and so arrogant, they can do nothing but fall. You know.
I know personally.
Yeah, so look at when you speak with knowledge and you speak about these things and you understand, look at you can learn the words of our forefathers and they apply today. Just there's nothing new under the sun. There's so many places where our forefathers' words apply. And if you repeat that, people will think you're a genius because they don't even know where they came from. They've never heard them. They've never been taught. You could stand up on our forefathers' shoulders, learn their words, and I mean, you have to know when to apply them, but there's plenty of places where they fit, and you quote them. And those words are so powerful, they're almost like prayers, let me tell you. People's minds open right up. It's unbelievable. I remember the first time I read the full Patrick Henry speech. You know, oh, give me liberty, give me debt. Well, he said a whole lot more than that. You know, It was a very rousing speech that he gave. You got to read it sometime. It makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck. It was a very, you know, and he's the one that really pushed that group into. Look at, they were afraid. They didn't want to go against England, the most powerful nation in the world, the most powerful navy. I mean, people thought they were crazy. And look at, it wasn't a popular revolution back then either.
No,
they only had a small percentage of the people. You know, then you had another percentage of the people that was for England, and the rest of the people are like today. They go along to get along, and, you know, they'll do whatever they got to do to get to work and get home that day, and who's ever running things is running things. So you're always going to have the 80% that go along to get along. So you don't need a popular revolution. We're like the Marines. We need a few good men, you know, in the right places. Our forefathers said, you know, you have to keep lighting the brush fires in men's minds, because a brush fire, by its nature, has a tendency to grow and become a forest fire. So you keep lighting those brush fires in men's minds, and eventually you enkindle liberty and freedom. People will start thinking free. They've got us so like a slave that we don't even know how to think free. And I'll tell you, it took me a long time, you know, to stop doing and saying things that I grew up with, like my constitutional rights. They're not my constitutional rights. The Constitution is the contract that we have with the government that tells them what they can do.
They're unalienable rights.
My rights are unalienable. They come from God. And the Bill of Rights is tells them what they can't do. But you don't have constitutional rights. You have unalienable rights, you know? And even Madison, he was kind of against the Bill of Rights, because he said, look, if you enumerate the rights, then they'll only give you the ones you say. And I mean, in a certain sense, he was right. But thank God they did it, because we wouldn't have what we have now, believe me.
Right.
So, you know, look, you have to study and you have to know those words so you can apply them in the right place. and we got tons and tons of stuff on our site that, you know, you take that, you take the little Constitution book, and you take our book for judges and sheriffs and jury members. I mean, with those two books, you can go in and we take them into court with us when we go to court, because those are the quotes
that you
want to quote. You know?
Yes, as one of, I have two books myself. One of them being the Common Law Handbook for Justices, Jurors, Sheriffs, and Bailiffs. And boy, that has been the double-edged sword. And the other one is the Title IV flag, the Citizen's Handbook.
Right. I like that one. That's a good book.
I do, too. It explains the scam from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't understand how the scam has been many, many, many years in the making, you know?
Yeah, that's a good little book, but you should still get the brown one that has the Constitution with all the subsections and the amendments and stuff, because sometimes...
A little pamphlet-looking book, correct?
Yeah, it's constitutional preservation or something. They sell them really cheap, I think. If you buy,
I have the one that says that it has the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States.
Yeah, well, that's good to have, because sometimes you got to go in there when you're going to show by what, you know, I don't always remember what subsection and clause.
I have that problem, too.
And you make little
thought in the Bible.
Like John said, you know, there's certain, they only have so many powers, and they're enumerated powers. And so you don't even have to remember them. You just put little tabs, and you can turn to them, you know? And you,
right.
And
there's nothing saying you can't take the book and notes into the court of law and refer.
Right. Eventually you get better and better, but, you know, it's always good to have them to refer and refresh your memory.
Right, because
so
I can't.
That's how
I
can do it
for the law and not the cases.
Right.
You know what I mean? The judicial outcomes, the case law. I can remember the law, but not the court determination. That's what I was reaching for.
Yeah, well, that's the least of it. I mean, we do use some Supreme Court decisions on the top decisions that, you know, like Marbury versus Madison, that haven't been overturned
that's the
in many, many years. But all that other case law, look, the Constitution trumps everything, you know. I mean, sometimes you get bad case law. You got to be careful, you know.
Right.
And
I have another question. Oh, go ahead.
That?
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
my
other
question.
Is,
go ahead. Yeah. I'd rather have you finish. I'm learning volumes.
Well, what I was going to say is, you know, you go to court and you want to quote a case, the judge may tell you, you know, has that been shepherdized? And what that means is, you know, is that the latest version of that particular ruling? Because sometimes they update them and you're supposed to shepherdize them to use them. But go ahead.
Okay. Now, another issue that I've come across, and some of this is for myself as much as to help others. Now, through the atrocities over the years that they have performed on me criminally and civilly, they have taken my right to bear arms and vote. They call me a felon, and I have yet to make a victim of anybody. So,
well, listen, that's the nature of the whole system. We understand that. And they're doing that to everybody, and it's not legal. And look,
so I can still be used for our cause? I mean, they're going to call me a felon, and my word should not be heard.
Look,
let me
tell you something. The NLA is the walking wounded, because many of us have been beat up and through their courts. We don't care what they call you. The fact of the matter is, if there's no victim in your crime, then technically there was no crime. So if you're not a rapist or a murderer, or you know, and you haven't robbed people, you know, with scamming and stuff, anything else is statutory. It's all baloney. It's a lie. If there was no injured party, then there was no crime. And guess what? The state can't be the injured party. Okay.
That's correct. There must be a belligerent person complaining.
Right. So, look, we don't care what they call you. It makes no difference. As a matter of fact, that's all going to go away when we get in the courts. That'll all go away. You remember the old Western movies? They put the guys in jail. They take their guns from them and everything. They let them out. They gave them their guns back. That's the way it used to be. Once you served your time, you were restored. You did your time. That was your rehabilitation, you know? Now, I don't say you give guns back to crazy people, but violent criminals, you know, with a history of violence. But, you know, look, if you did commit a crime and you paid the price, you should be restored back to, you know, what's this business? You can't vote anymore and all this other baloney. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I never understood how 3DWI is equal to we get to steal your right to bear arms and vote.
Yeah, well, you know what? Just sneak across the border and sneak back in. You'll have more rights. You'll have more rights than you lost. Anyway,
yeah,
they'll have you voting in a day, and you'll have all the insurance you need. But look, don't worry about that. That's all a bunch of baloney. Just educate yourself and get so you can articulate and do the work that needs to be done.
Okay. Now, talking about education, I have a problem. Being how they have beat me down to this poor situation and position that I am in right now, I'm a union carpenter on welfare, for God's sake. And the only thing I have to even look online is my phone. I just recently tried to take the civics course or sign up for register for it, and it said I needed a flash something, you know. I'm
well,
sorry.
Carl's been working to make it very much more mobile friendly. It is a problem. I used to try to go on my phone. I got frustrated. I don't even do it. I don't need to do it because I got three computers that I work with. Look, you're better off going to the library and using one of their computers. I mean, you can use the phone, and we are working to make it better all the time whenever there's a new whatever. I mean, if they tell you to download a flash player, you should try it, because it might be all that you need to do. But really, we have on the website everything you need to educate yourself, you know, and as far as anything you want to do that pertains to your relationship to the government. I mean, really, if you go through our site, you'll get a real good education, you know, at least in civics. You know, I'm not saying you're going to get, you can get some geography and some stuff like that. You won't get too much math, you know, but nevertheless, you'll be better educated than most of the people out there, you know?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good on my own just because of the, you know, the position they've put me in is really, I have nothing left to lose. I want justice, and I want justice for everybody. And, yeah, you know, if I can show the people around me that, hey, I can win. If I can win, you can win, and so can we all.
Yeah. Well, look, that's what this is about. That's what we're working towards. Okay? So keep the faith and keep plugging along, okay?
Yes. I got an email the other day with a Hyde Park address, New York. I was wondering if that would be okay to send my story, and I have a story I've been working on. I'm coming to a finish with it. It's only from 07 to 2010. There's more criminal acts and civil acts against me than that, but those atrocities alone would sure clear out some honorable people.
Look it. If you send it to the Hyde Park address, there's lots of stuff that comes in there. People send us all kinds of things. It's going to come in, and it's going to go in a box, to be honest with you, because you're one of 300 million people in this nation, and probably 299 million of us have problems, and many of them send us their cases, and we can't read them all. You know what I mean? What I would say is it's very important to document what goes on, because that all becomes like an affidavit. When we get in the court, you're going to have redress on all of that. Don't send it to us. Hang on to it yourself, and then when we get caught up and we get in the courts, you'll use that as the basis of your case when you go in for restitution. That's my advice.
Hang on to it. Be patient.
Right. That's right. And then when the time comes, you'll have an easy job, because you'll already have it written out. You'll already have the dates and the times and the incidents. So then you'll be able to run your case like that. So that's what
I tried to get my trial out of the court of record, and I was told, is there a monetary situation that applies to getting records out of the court?
Well, they can charge you for copies, and it has to be a nominal fee. There have been people that fought them on that. You know what I mean? You can get copies. It should only be like 25 cents a page or something. You know, if you go for a transcript, though, they make big dollars on them, and they're hundreds of pages. So if you're trying to get a transcript as opposed to a court docket, the court docket shouldn't cost you any more than $5 or $10 maximum. And actually, they're supposed to be able to do it digitally. They all got money to do it digitally, and they can only charge you for the time it takes them to push that button and that nickel CD. And if they charge you more than $20, they're breaking the law. But you know, Bob Schultz had a case, and that's exactly what it was about that he won. And there's guidelines on what they can charge you for that stuff. And so you might want to figure what that is. You know, the only thing that they do get big dollars for is the transcripts. They get so much per page, you know?
Yeah, I think that's what I asked for. I wasn't sure. See, I won trial.
You know, the court reporter, the court reporter transcripts where they sit there and type, those people make money doing that, and they have a fee that they give for that.
So all I need is the court docket will hold the information that I need. I don't need
the court docket will have all the information you need in as far as who they were, what the charges were, all that, you know, just the facts, ma'am. Only the facts. That the court docket has all those names and things and dates that you need, you know, and then you're gonna write an affidavit. What you're already doing is you're writing a story. You'll have to boil that down into an affidavit. And I mean, look at you only need that transcript. Is if you think if there's something in there that they're lying about or they've changed, you know, we don't bother with transcripts. I mean, we do court cases, we do, we call it dockets and affidavits. Basically, is all you really need. All right, I want to go move ahead though. We got a lot of people,
sir.
So it's been good.
Yes,
talking.
Sir. I thank you very much.
Yeah.
I appreciate you guys. Have a good night.
Yeah. Oregon, Gunther.
Yeah. Hi, John. Hi, Gerard. This is Gunter here, coordinator in Oregon. So we've been pretty busy down here, and I've just kind of reorganizing with our local NLA committee here. My coordinator, Dave Hassel, and I asked everybody to join this call. we're pretty well engaged here. I'm doing so much local stuff. I've kind of stepped back from the last 3-4 months from really being active with the National Liberty Alliance, but I'm still doing a lot of promotion here locally. And we're also working with a group called the State of Jefferson, and they just last Wednesday went down to Sacramento and capital of California, and registered another 7 states that have resolutions to join the State of Jefferson. So Oregon, we're the first ones in line. We organized a committee here, and also working with Jackson County, and then the Mulhare situation erupted with the Hammonds. We had a few people that went to the hearing for the sentencing. It was about 5 weeks ago. Laura Walker was also in on that, and a fellow from Utah, and I'm also involved with the Pacific Patriot Network and the Oath Keepers here. The Oath Keepers in Josephine County are about the strongest chapter of Oath Keepers in Oregon, and we're dealing with the Sugar Pine Mine. I talked with Robert Bristow yesterday. We had a special meeting with some of the Oregon county representatives, and Robert joined us and said for us to get affidavits and wonderful work, of course, on the writ of mandamus, correct? That you're working on, that you just read?
Yeah, the show.
Yeah, call. that was to the Congress, and it is a writ of mandamus and a show cause. They have to respond to this. But,
right.
You know, you're so close out to the action of what's happening. We have two people heading out that way to, be sort of an ambassador between us and them. And if there are people out there, they can only be out there for short periods of time. So none of them can stay out there because they live in different states. But if we got someone local that wants to work with these two people and then continue on as an ambassador, so to speak, to bring information back and forth between what's going on, and we also want to get a hold of and speak with other groups out there, like the committee that they put together. What was the name of that committee?
The Committee of Safety, and we got lines on them. We got a guy that's going to be there all week, John. We got somebody going to stay there a week, which is really good.
Okay. Yeah, we got two people. Maybe there's three. Maybe there's another person. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. I didn't want to reveal it.
Yeah.
We're focusing in on actually the next Monday will you have Chris Ann Hall for a feature?
I don't know if that's confirmed.
I think the connection has been made, and we're going to try to get a meeting with her this week. We'd want to just have a private talk with her before we bring her on, and then of course she'll be on if possible next week. And last week we had Brent Winters, the author of Excellence in Common Law. And that was a pretty good, I thought that was really great for us, and we need more people like that to come speak to us to give us an education and different insights.
I'll backpedal and listen to that.
Well,
We have a lot of strong stuff going here locally, in fact, even changing the charter to put in common law. We have our most recent constitutional sheriff who was replaced by the corporate fellow. And he said, "Gunner, I wish I would have known now when I was sheriff, So he's just recently got a very update briefing, and I briefed him quite a bit on the National Liberty Alliance and also the common law grand jury and the principles and all the writs. So he's reading some of the writs of mandamus and the quo warranto and stuff, and so he's very impressed. And so he might be a good emissary to work with David Ward, the sheriff in Mulhare.
Send him to the powerofthecountysheriff.com or .org. I don't remember. What is it, John?
Yeah, it's all of the above. Common net. And also, we are building, we do have a committee, a sheriff's committee, and we're looking to really get a lot of ex-sheriffs or other law enforcement agents or officers, and also military people with a strong military background to run in that committee. So anybody that fits into that would work with us, because it's always good to have people who understand how sheriffs think, how other law enforcement agents think. It's good to have those people talking to those people and then work out to really get them to come to appreciate what National Liberty Alliance is all about. Everything we do, there's nothing we do that we don't notify the FBI and the sheriffs and the marshals. If we send a paper into court, they get a copy of it. Whatever we write, they get a copy. They don't have to go and they don't have to spy on us. They should just join us. They don't have to spy on us because we send them a copy of everything we do.
Yeah, that's what we're working on too. We don't hide. We have everything out in the open, and it's been that way too with the Oath Keepers and the Pacific Patriot Network and all of the work that's going on. Of course, it was by surprise that Ammon Bundy took off and took over that national conservancy there. So we're just learning to deal with the situation, but it's turning out to be a boom for us because it gives us something to focus on and rally our energy towards liberating ourselves from the system. So it's given us it's reinvigorated us
We gotta help them unwind that and then keep it alive, because look at you guys are going to have the distinction of maybe being the first ones in the court, because it's a smaller state, less population. It'd be nice to get some constitutional sheriffs running out there too. But we'll see. And look, as the groundswell comes, you get more law enforcement that are willing to step up to the plate when they realize they got people behind them. I mean, if you can't think about taking one of these evil guys and arresting them if you don't have your community behind you, because they'll just decimate you, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So it's very important to be behind them.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all I have, and I look forward to catching up next week for the Monday call. If you have Chris Hall there, and I'll be going over the documents and connecting, and whatever emissaries you have that come out there, you can have them give them, you know, my contact information, and we can help each other out, help them.
Well, that's very good, and we will be in contact because it's important. And like I said, we want this thing to go forward. And once it unwinds, we want to keep the momentum going to bring us where we need to be. You know.
Yeah, you got it. It's the exposure that we need, but it's
going to
happen kind of clumsily.
Yeah, I know. But hey, God works in strange ways.
And Gunny.
Yeah.
This is Robert. Yeah, I should be hearing from Chris Ann Hall tomorrow or Wednesday to try to set the date.
Okay.
For sure.
Because I can.
Yeah. Don't forget to set a meeting, a short meeting prior to confirming.
Absolutely.
It. We'd like to talk with her a little.
I figure when she calls, I'll try to get a hold of you, John, while she's
okay.
on the phone.
Sounds good. You got my cell. If I'm not online, you got my cell.
Yes.
Okay, thanks, Robert, John, Gerard.
Okay, thank you very much. That was Gunny. Okay, we got a wireless caller, no name. You've been unmuted.
Says I can ask my question. Am I online?
Yes, you can. Yes, you may.
I want to thank Mike first for staying with us.
Wait a minute. What's your name and your state? First name.
I'm Les Taylor, Schuyler County Liberty Alliance, New York Liberty Alliance, National Liberty Alliance. We are the ones that helped constitute New York State.
Yeah.
I want to thank Mike.
Gotcha.
I want to thank Mary. I want to thank John. I want to thank all of you for what you've done. But I have a couple comments on what I've heard tonight, and I have a couple questions. The first comment is there is a judge in Alaska because it comes up that and she says that the common law is established in Alaska. It came here. If one state falls, they all fall. She is with us. They are on board. The next comment would be, oh, my gosh, I need to get to wear this. We need prayers. We're going to go up here to court on Wednesday, and we're going to fight for the right to free travel because it comes up and they're harassing me. And I'm going to go to court on Wednesday. And I would love a camera there, but I don't know they're going to let it in, but we're going to fight for the right to free travel with all this. There is another issue. It came up tonight in this conversation that there is no other law. Yes, there is. April 22nd, 1997, the International Human Rights, that we have the right to free travel and the whole thing. I mean, my right under that, I need my God-given rights. I need my constitutional rights, and I have the right under international human law, Chapter 13, to free travel. If they're going to fucking try and take my... It really doesn't matter. I just need a few prayers on that. But there is a judge in Alaska, from what I've heard, and she has... the common law is established in Alaska, which came up tonight. And so one state falls, we all fall. And my God bless you, and I don't know what to say. I just need some prayers. We're going to go fight for anything you... Oh, my question was, there's an issue come up that John and Lil and John Darge, all these guys asked me when I was on Facebook when this first started and we constituted to log on and get a National Liberty Alliance. Well, I started the Facebook page. Doesn't really matter. There's a bigger one now. But they're saying that there's 22 or more posts there. They can't even be... I don't know what to say, that they're trying to control that, and I need a list of what's acceptable to go on that page. And you guys, I'm Les Taylor, Schuyler County, New York, and
you're going to want to talk with Justin Tanner. He's on the call tonight, probably.
I was told Tyrone I need to talk with.
No, Justin
that
Tanner.
Is controlling
Justin,
that page now.
Justin Tanner, but Justin Yuckin. Tanner
okay.
is our...
Can you have him get a hold of me? If anybody needs to get a hold of me... I'm 607-280-5851. and I'm on board with all of you, and I need prayers when I go up here Wednesday night, and we're going to fight for every one of your rights to free travel, and we're going to win, or I'm going to fucking jail, and I don't care. We're going to win. We're going to charge them all with Title 18 violations, 241, 242. We are going to fucking rail them. And we need prayers, or they're going to send me to jail, and everybody involved in that is all going to jail. And I got a judge in Alaska that says the common law jury is established, and common law is not the law of the land. And I secede this back to you all, and may God bless you all for what you are doing. And I hope to continue on board. And God bless Mike for staying with me, though we have problems. And God bless Mary. And God bless John. And God bless you all.
All right, well, okay. I just want to make a comment that just for everyone to remember that we are a G-rated program here. Some of us do have our children listening in on us, so please let's keep that in mind. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello? By the way, common law has been here since the beginning. We didn't need an international law to reestablish it. The Constitution says we're guaranteed, you know, a common law court. So we don't need any international court to reinstate
that. Seventh Amendment.
That's right. The Seventh Amendment is here. All we got to do is start using the law that we have that they're ignoring. You know. So anyway, I don't want to get big into that. I got Colorado Michael. You're unmuted.
Hello?
You're there.
Yeah, there's a lady talking. Go ahead. She's saying hello.
Yeah, hi. Yes, this is Tanya from California. I have a couple of questions and comments. There was a gentleman at the beginning of who first started talking. I think it was Tim from Alaska.
Yeah.
And he did mention something about a commercial lien, which that was never answered. I wanted to know if somebody can answer that question that he brought up.
Well, commercial liens, that's what people end up going to jail over. You know, the government can use them and the corporations can use them, but God forbid you should use them. You know, they try to scare us out of doing commercial liens. Now, there's nothing wrong with a commercial lien if it's done properly. And basically, if you know, they put some new laws in recently and I've read them, and it's just a reiteration of the same baloney. Look, you can't lien somebody unless you can prove it, you know. You just want to – we don't do that stuff because it makes red flags. Some of the sovereign groups and that, they went out and they would put liens on people, you know, by giving them a notice and demand. And when they didn't answer, they put a lien on them. Well, that's really not due process. Just because I accuse you of a debt and you don't answer me, that doesn't mean that you have the right to go ahead and lien me. You know, you have to take it into a court, you know, and really it should be a jury that decides that, not just you. And you know, just, you know, under common law, when you don't answer, you're in dishonor. There's a whole process you go through. But you want to do anything you do through the courts. And to run that stuff outside of the courts, you're just taking a chance on going to jail. That's all. I mean, and people put them on for millions and millions of dollars. You're never going to collect that stuff anyway, you know. So I don't know what else you want to know about them. We kind of shy away from them, you know.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, the man brought it up. I've heard it too a little bit lately. I just thought I would ask since he brought it up.
Yeah, you know, there's also the UCC that does a lot of that stuff, the Universal Commercial Code, and the UCC. The trouble is, you know, they wrote that for themselves, and so you go and start dancing in there, and giving credibility to that fiction. They always got a stumbling block, a trap for you, you know, and once in a while you'll get away with something, but eventually they're going to get you. And, you know, a lot of people I know have ended up in jail with the UCC. So we don't mess with that either. It's so much easier to stick to the fundamentals, because the fundamentals is the Constitution and the enumerated powers. Look, if it says they have 18 powers, that's all they have. They can't have 20 or 21 or anything else. If it's not in there, guess what? They don't have it. You know, we've been putting up with them doing a lot of extracurricular activity, I'll call it. You know, and they got away with it because we don't scream about it, you know?
Okay. My other question was, 2 weeks ago, I was listening online, and John mentioned there's a lady that who wrote a book, How to Do Your Own Divorce, and he was talking about this woman. Is that book available online to be purchased?
Boy, I don't know anything about that.
What book is that?
You were saying 2 weeks ago that a woman had written a book, How to Do Your Own Divorce, and she was thrown in jail.
That wasn't me. I don't talk about that kind of a subject matter that I can recall.
No.
Maybe someone brought something up that they had written a book or something, but...
You know what? I purposely wrote it down because I was on hold, and then by the, you know, but no, that's okay. So
I knew somebody that wrote a book on how to do your own divorce, and the lawyer...
Yeah, I think we had a caller talking about that.
Right, and she did get thrown in jail, and they went crazy chasing her, and they turned her whole life upside down. I don't know that book is even available. Whatever, I don't know how good it was, but it must have been good enough for them to come after her, right? And you know, it's like by the time you get done fighting that 4 or 5 years down the road, the book is like defunct. I don't know that if she ever published it or anything else, but I do know the story, but I don't know. You know, how you would get any of those materials or if they are available even.
Is her name allowed to be released or no?
Well, it could be, but I'm not sure that I know what it is.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
Well, if you remember, it was last week or the week before. It must have been the week before because last week.
2 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. If it was 2 weeks ago, go up online, go to the Monday night call page and look up the audio and, search through the audio to get whatever information you can.
That's why, the name wasn't mentioned. Just the story was
told. Yeah, then we wouldn't know either.
Yeah, it was somebody told. Hey,
okay.
Jan says eBay has a book that you can do your own divorce. You want to do an eBay divorce?
Well, I just thought I would ask because it sounded really interesting. The other thing, too, is that 2 weeks ago as well, you discussed the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and one more thing, and I didn't write it down. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Probably the Declaration of Independence stick them all. That's the capstone. Everybody leaves out the Declaration.
And our constitutional courses exactly on all three documents.
Okay, and that's the other thing I wanted to ask you too. So do you have to finish the civics course before you?
No,
do the
you could take them both at the same time.
Okay.
We put no limitations on it. You could take one first or the other first. It doesn't matter.
Okay, that's fine. And my last question would be, I know we're not supposed to talk about cases on here, but I just do have a question, and I'm not going to get into my case. But if a case is already in the federal court, is there anything that can be done?
Well, let me just ask, what type of case?
It's a FOIA case.
A what case?
FOIA, Freedom of Information Act.
And you don't want it in the federal court?
It's already in. I'm the plaintiff. It's in the case. It's in the court, the federal court.
Okay.
The thing is, we were supposed to have a hearing, and I asked for a change of date, and my judge came back and said that he decided he's not going to change the date. He's just going to, he has enough information. He'll make a decision on his own.
Well, you don't want him to make a decision.
Well, I know.
Yeah, you let him know. Tell him, whoa, I don't want a summary judgment here because I want common law. Let's get a jury out here.
Okay.
Well, if he said that and you let him get away with it, you should have protested. You should have.
Just today from opposing counsel because the defendants are the FBI, the NSA, and the CIA. And their representative sent me a letter, and he said, this is a letter that's from the judge, and I just wanted to make sure you have a copy. You'll probably get in the mail. And when I read it, that's what it said, that my judge decided, he's not. Our case was supposed to be on the 14th of this month, on Thursday, and I asked for a change. The other side agreed to a date change. They said that's fine, and my judge came back and said no, that he's just going to make a decision.
Well, you're the plaintiff, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, and they don't, like the plaintiff, they figure should be ready. They don't give the plaintiff as much mercy as they do the defendant. Now, listen, if the FBI is sending you a paper saying that this is what the judge said, and you haven't seen anything from the judge, I hate to tell you, but that's an ex parte communication. What are they doing talking to each other without you being there?
Well, no, it wasn't the FBI. Well, it was his representative. What are they, the attorney general?
So they're talking to the judge.
That would be the U.S. attorney. The attorney general is with the state.
Yeah, yeah, U.S. attorney, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, the U.S. attorney is telling you that the judge is going to, basically what he's telling you, that they're going to do a summary judgment. Now, they should have noticed you officially. You should get a paper because you have so many days to object. And you know, if he decides he's going to do a summary judgment, you have to object and you have to give him a writ of error if he does it, you know, and I mean, that's an under common law. I don't know what kind of, we don't want to discuss your case,
mm-hmm.
but you know, when you go in, you're supposed to open up a court of record, a common law. I don't know what you opened up or how you did it, but you know, if you didn't do that, then you really can't hold his feet to the fire because you're in his equity chancery court.
But I'm the plaintiff, right? So, I mean...
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Doesn't matter.
It is true. It is true. She could discover that her situation at any given time and correct it. There's a fraud against you. So, yeah, now you're discovering it. Now you can execute it, and you can go in there and say, hey, by the way, you know, this is a common law court. Look at... It's a common law court, period, because that's what it's supposed to be, all right? That's what the Constitution says. And when you go in there and they hijack you into another jurisdiction, then what they've done is they've committed fraud. They've actually hijacked you to another jurisdiction. And when you correct that and you give them a writ of error and you overturn it and you make your ruling back, you have the opportunity to do something then or wait a little while to see how they respond to it, to sue them. For acting under the color of law, conspiracy to violate your unalienable right of due process. And so that's the key to this whole thing. So you could go back and reestablish the fact that this is a common law court. Now, the courts have said, the United States Supreme Court has said numerous times that the only thing necessary to make a prima facie case is an affidavit. You walk into court with an affidavit, you slap it down on the table, and if it's unrebutted, you win. And it's got to be a common law court. Now, an unrebutted affidavit that you don't even have to go to a jury. It's just a slam dunk at that point. That's the rule of the court.
So I could respond with an affidavit?
Well, do you have an affidavit?
When I was filing for the FOIA throughout the year, I mean, there was an affidavit at the beginning.
Yeah, but you have to go into the court with an affidavit. If they don't come back with an affidavit to rebut that affidavit, then you win. And if they don't have an affidavit filed in the court as part of the case, I can tell you right now the judge is already planning to throw the case out.
Right, okay, yeah, and I don't have that, no.
Yeah, well, you got to fix your case. You can go back and fix it. You know, it's your right to go back and fix it. You're discovering these things. You can discover this anytime you want. You're looking for remedy. After all, remember, you know, it is a common law maxim. For every injury, there must be a remedy. And it doesn't matter. There's no such thing as statute of limitations. And, you know, the plaintiff or the person, the injured party, really can't make an error per se in procedure. It's up to the judge to make sure the court goes according to process, not to the individuals that's in the courts making the arguments. And they should be really arguing the facts of the matter and getting down to the nitty-gritty, because the facts will tell everything.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. We were supposed to have a hearing, and I asked for – we haven't been in court.
But you don't want a hearing either. You want a trial.
Well, they set the hearing, right? And so I asked for it to be changed, and he came back and said no, that he's going to – yeah, I get that, but that's what he said.
You're not in a common law court.
Okay.
A hearing means that they're going to hear your case and make a decision, and that means they're going to make some kind of summary judgment, whether it's a summary judgment for the whole case or some kind of a summary judgment that affects the case. A motion to dismiss. I object. That's common law. You can't make a motion to ask that my case be dismissed. I'm the injured party. I got an affidavit up there. It's got to go before a court of law. What are you talking about? You see, you got to push that point in your court case. And so I would go back home and write a paper and extend on your case and bring in an affidavit, swear in the affidavit exactly what took place and what the injury is and what the situation is, get it into the court, and even put into the thing. You put an attention to the judge, a letter or something, that, well, even put it right into the thing. I'm just discovering these things because, look it, I'm discovering that the court isn't going along according to the process, and I'm learning that this court is operating illegally, and I want to bring it back to where it belongs, and that's common law.
Okay.
And that'll drive them crazy.
I know, right?
Look, we need more people driving them crazy.
Well, they're just kind of, I mean, at first, the CIA, the FBI, and the NSA, they were just kind of, they were just really coming up with nonsense, you know, and I kind of had enough, and I just told I just sent an email to the judge, and I don't care. I'm just like, you know what, I have enough of this. This has been going on for so long, and I just sent him an email, and I said, you know, they're taking advantage of me because I'm not an attorney, and I'm doing this pro se. Well, he kind of put a stop on everything and immediately just asked for a motion, and so we had dates where we were supposed to file. I filed, they were supposed to file October 9th, for me, November 9th, we did that, and then they were supposed to respond. They did respond, and I don't agree, and so I was hoping that, you know, that we would, I mean, I have the right to argue what I don't agree with what they're saying, you know, so anyways, I was going to send another email. I spent like the whole evening with a friend of mine.
I don't know. You know, they don't like you sending communication.
No, they do. They probably.
That's considered ex parte. I mean,
yeah,
look, you could send the judge an email, but you have to send it to the other side.
Well, I was gonna. That was my plan.
When you send them an email and you said they're taking advantage because I don't have a lawyer, what you did is you put his butt on the rack because technically, he's responsible for you. When you go in without a lawyer, that's why they don't like you to have a lawyer, because you can always come back and say, well, they railroaded me. I didn't know what I was doing. And really, like John said, you're not supposed to fail because of procedure. They're supposed to be getting to the meat of the matter. They're not supposed to run you through, step on the crack and you broke your mother's back, go back two steps, you know, skip a turn and all this other baloney, you know. So, and that's what they're doing to you. And when you complain that they're running over you because you don't have an attorney, well, you know what? You know just enough to make yourself dangerous, and you got him worried that you're going
to
get him.
Well, I think so, because everything changed after that. He put a stop to everything because they were just saying, you know, we don't agree to this, and we want this, and we want that. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I mean, I'll do all of that. But then finally, you know, we had a hearing. I think it was I don't know. I can't remember. Anyways, we were supposed to be in court in August. I think it was August 18th or 20th or something like that. And it was canceled, vacated. So I showed up over there, and there was nobody there. And so then I went to the clerk's office, and then I went to they have like a pro se that works in the building that helps people, not a pro se, but an attorney that helps pro se people. And he said, I was going to be in your courtroom this morning, but, you know, it's been vacated. I said, well, I didn't know. And he said, well, you know, they sent you a letter on this day and that day. And I said, well, I haven't gone to my post office box. And I said, you know, nobody told me. And then I just sent their deputy court an email, and I just said, you know, they're taking complete advantage of me, you know. And they send this at the last minute. He said, well, we sent it on Monday. I said, but today's Thursday, you know what I mean? And you're sending a letter now? I mean, anyways, I have a legitimate complaint. And, you know, I wouldn't go to court if I didn't feel like it was legitimate, you know. I don't have anything else to do.
You're just tenacious enough he wants to get rid of you because, like I said, you're saying stuff that's dangerous to him. So I would just do like John says and go back and redo the case again and see how he likes them apples, you know?
Well, I was going to respond. Like, now in his letter, it just states, you are notified that the motion for summary judgment docket item number 22 before Judge Davila, previously noticed for January 14th at 9 a.m., has been taken under submission without oral argument pursuant to Civil LR7-1B, whatever that is. The January 14, 2016 hearing is vacated. The court to issue further order on the submitted motion. And that's it. So it's like, that's not okay. I asked for a date change.
Well, first of all, obviously the other side submitted a motion. I don't know why you didn't get notice of that. You got so many days to object to that. Unless this is it, you need to object and give them a writ of error and go back in. You know what I mean? You always get a chance to respond, and you know, and you always have so much time to do it. But I don't want to really go get you.
I know. Where do we? I understand.
We said we weren't going to do it, and we're doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
But that's okay. No, but that's okay. So, but I guess I could do. I probably could respond with an affidavit, right? Because, like I said, I was going to go into a long letter anyways. So, would that be okay?
Affidavit, sworn affidavit is a prima facie case, period, absolutely. But you need to tell the judge what he needs not to do. You need to tell the judge, and write down, you're taking advantage of me. They're moving me into foreign courts. It's exactly what they're doing, by the way. They move me into a foreign court. I don't know. I don't even understand what's going on. I want to get to a common law court where plain people talk in plain language, and there's no little things that, you know, motion to dismiss for whatever BS thing. That's insanity. It's not a court of law. That's a bunch of lawyers that put all that stuff together and to create loopholes so that they can commit crimes and get away with it.
Right. And the common law, that's on which amendment is that again? Because you were talking about it tonight.
Seventh Amendment is common law. But look at this whole document is a common law. The Constitution is the common law. You know, if you want the word common law, you'll find it in the Seventh Amendment. But look at the United States Supreme Court has said numerous times, and it's said in American jurisprudence and in other places, that without the common law, the Constitution couldn't even be understood or appreciated. This is a common law document. And our unalienable rights, right, brings us right into common law. I mean, that's what this is all about. The rights, and, you know, the establishment of this country was put under God right from the Declaration of Independence. The Creator was beckoned upon, and we're creating a nation under the Creator. And right there, that's common law. It's good. Natural law and common law are synonymous. People don't misunderstand that. They don't understand. And some people say, well, why don't you use the word natural law instead of common law? And to be honest with you, I would prefer using that statement, you know, that phrase myself. But I use common law because history is filled with that phrase, and common law is understood to be natural law. So we're going to stick with the words that we find riddled throughout Black's law and other legal dictionaries.
Okay, well, listen, thanks for your help. I really appreciate it.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you.
Nice Have talk. A good night.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, we're going to unmute Anne from New Mexico, it says. Hello, New Mexico.
Hi. Hi, this is Anne in New Mexico.
Yep. What's up, Anne?
Thank you for doing what you're doing. I was motivated to get a tablet and write names and tell people about this site and this education. I wanted to go out today and do that. But I talked to a few of the members. I'm just new. And I need to have more information on this writ of error, and I need to study the website a little bit better. It was really helpful to hear people talk about their situation and then hear a remedy, a resolution. Mm-hmm. I wanted to share with you, today was quite an eventful day. I had a judge. I wouldn't go beyond the railing. I would not identify myself. He ruled against me. I had a preemptive challenge to the judge. That was an affidavit, and he ruled against me, and I'm thinking I need to do a writ of error. I ask him, where is the jury? I have paid for a jury. I wanted a jury today. And so your conversation is helpful in the fact that I need to ask for a hearing, not a hearing, but a trial, and present the facts and be right there.
Well look,
with a jury.
What I was going to say is these judges, they move heaven and earth not to have a trial. They're taught not to have a trial, and they'll do everything they can not to give you a trial.
Yeah.
So,
your remedy is really going to be on the other side of our work here at National Liberty Alliance through the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. Once we get common law back in the courts, we're not going to permit all this stuff. You won't have to have this battle. Look, from day one, the first time I went into a courtroom, I come to realize I'm arguing with the judge. What the heck am I arguing with the judge with? I should be arguing against those people over there, and they should be arguing against me. Yeah. Why am I arguing with the judge? And, you know, it didn't dawn on me at first, but I got to realize this. My papers are all written telling the judge that he's got to obey the law, that this is the Constitution, and trying to educate him, telling him why, you know, this is what – I try to put him in a box, but they won't be put in the box. And it frustrated me to no end. And you know, not going to get justice in these courts. It's very difficult. You can get them if you understand the process and the procedure, how things work. But then, you know, look at the judge comes into play also. How arrogant is he? How safe does he really feel to tell you, I don't care about the Constitution? And they actually say things like that. You know, you're going to get the Constitution in my court. Let's move on with this. You know, you get statements like that, believe it or not. But these people are so cocky. But you see, when we come in, okay, and you come in with the grand jury and with a lot of people, they get a little nervous there. And that's the key, is to bring a lot of people with you and then be able to respond to everything they do and lay things out. But we do get lost. It's not worth arguing anything. If you got to argue a problem with the judge, you're arguing jurisdiction. And if you're going to argue jurisdiction, you object one time. I object to this whole process. You've hijacked my jurisdiction. I started in common law. I'm finding myself here in Chancery. I object to this process and sit down. Then when you leave, you write your writ of error for everything he did. You let him know, that they have violated your unalienable rights. And you overturn the judge, and then you go down to the federal court, and you open up a court case, and you sue every officer in that court for conspiracy to violate your unalienable rights and right of due process. And then you get a new judge and a new lawyer, and you start all over again, and you see if they want to join the team over there in the federal building. And that's the only way you're going to get any justice in these courts. But if you're not careful, they'll try to get you for contempt of court. They'll try to get you for all the other BS. You have to be quick and you have to be real swift in this. You can't be spending months on end in a courtroom, we've discovered. We've spent months on end in courtrooms coming back and coming back. And what we're doing is we're just responding to them. Wait a second, yeah, I'm going to make them respond to me. Shut them down right off the bat.
But the federal court here in New Mexico is as corrupt as...
That doesn't matter, because that judge in the federal court is a little more educated than the other judge. They're a little more conscious of and concerned with the risk factors there. And when they've seen what you've done with the other judges, they're going to wonder if you're going to do it to them too. And if they don't, then do it to them too. You see? And then you'll get another federal judge, and then you'll get another judge in the state or county or wherever it is that you're arguing. And believe me, at some point in time, you'll get somewhere. But again, there's other things involved here. You have to have a little experience in the court. You have to be able to write some papers. You have to understand how the process works. You know, so there's an education necessary here. You know, we try to give as good an education as we can by going to a civics course and a constitutional course. But then on top of that, there's another course up there. It's just in book form on court procedure and process. And that's something you go to take on your own and to learn how the courts work. And we're not too interested in pushing that. Because, you see, that's just given the procedure. It's given procedure and process, yes, but it's given a lot of information on how they operate the courts, which shouldn't be operated in those ways. They shouldn't be making all these stupid motions. They shouldn't require these, quote-unquote, cause of actions the way they do. Oh, you haven't fulfilled all of the... Wait a second, my arm is gone. I don't have an arm no more. I lost my arm. This guy took it off, because you didn't write your cause of action right or something. It's ridiculous. Look at Supreme Court said over and over again, the only thing necessary for a prima facie case is an affidavit. Rebut it or you lose, period. And they won't rebut it.
Well, it was an affidavit, and it was not, and I brought that point up, that he couldn't rule on this because, you know, the opposition, the attorney, didn't rebut the affidavit point by point. And there was no affidavit. There's no witness. And I brought up the issue because what I've heard, I don't know if I heard this, yes, I did, that lawyers, their only function, yeah, I heard this on your, I've been listening to your MP3s, that a lawyer's only function is to cross-examine his witness. So he's been testifying.
Oh,
for
yeah, you got to object
the
all the time. Every time that lawyer opens his mouth, you got to object. Because look at, he's always bearing witness.
And I did that, and the judge stopped me. He criticized the law.
Oh, well,
he
then you should misquoted
the law.
The only one thing you could do there is just object to the procedure and sit down. Go home and write your papers. Sue them all. Move on. It doesn't mean your case disappears. They're going to have to get another judge. They're going to have to get other lawyers because those people who are being sued by you, they can't be the officers of the court in that case anymore. See, just replace the people in the courtroom. And if you got to do it again, let them know. You got to go in there with an axe. You got to see that you're coming in with an axe. You know, you have to be polite. You have to be gentle. You have to be nice. You don't get excited. You just be humble. Be meek. I object, Your Honor. I'm not going along with any of this. This whole process is wrong. I object. Sit down. Go home. Write your papers. You see, you don't want to say too much in a courtroom because they'll try to get you on contempt, and they're only going to argue the point anyway, or just deny. Overruled. Forget that. You don't want that opportunity. You put it on paper. Let him put it on paper, and you're going after the judge now, and you're going after the lawyer. You got to get your case to be heard. You have a right to be heard, and that's the point. And that's the only way you're going to be heard is to get all these people out of the room and stop the nonsense. And,
so
and you want a jury.
I put in a writ of error, and I demand a jury.
Right, but you have to know how to write a writ of error. There, we have examples up on the website. You have to know how to write it. You have to know how to walk into the court and handle them to some degree. You don't have to be really good at it, but you know, look, you got to know what the next step is. That's the key. You got to know when to open your mouth and when to shut your mouth. And usually you want to shut your mouth most of the time, unless you're arguing your case where you're really battling against the other side, because that's what it's supposed to be about. You say this, they say that, and you'd say this, and they say the other thing, and you bring your witnesses, and you bring the case up. You shouldn't be having to deal with all these problems with the judge and all these problems with the lawyer. They're just putting wrenches in the whole thing, and that's what they're designed to do. Look, I have never seen a court case anywhere that doesn't just require an afternoon to get it done with, and they'll spend years on it. Well, what is that all about? I mean, every case that's up there, if they're going to do summary judgments and people are going to permit it, you can do it right away. And if you get, you know, you just put all your paperwork, you get ready. Everybody's ready for the case? Yeah, we're all ready. Okay, pull a jury together and let's go do it. And you'll be done in a couple hours, if that. Many cases, maybe even shorter than that. I mean, what is there to it? It's usually cut and dry. And if the other side has any kind of wisdom in them at all or common sense, if it's clean contract problem and they see and understand who's going to lose, then they just yield and make a deal and get out of there.
Well, I'm going to study the
website.
No, you're
right, they're used to acting the way they do.
Okay.
So it is an uphill battle.
So we are going to do the common law courts right in the existing court system.
Of course. That's our courthouse.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're being trained to do.
Right.
Okay.
Because it is a common law. It's supposed to be common law. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know if she was trying to say something, but I just hit the button. Anyway, we got Connecticut Crystal. You've been unmuted.
Hi. Okay. Fine. I'm trying to get this. What was I calling? Okay, I send those paperwork and stuff in. I went to the courts. Here's my proof of all my deeds and everything. And I said, and I wrote up, I would like to speak to Mr. UI and Mr. Bank of America. And I said, I would like to see you on December 21st at the time and the location, and I want a sworn affidavit from each one. No one showed up, so I said, I want the case dismissed. The judge goes, is the two parties here? And the clerks go, no, they're not. I said, I want this case dismissed. He turned around and said, we're taking your house. This is my court. So they sent me the paperwork again. So, and that's where we stand right now, which I'm not, you know.
What did, I didn't hear you. What did he say when you said you wanted to dismiss that the other party wasn't there?
Yeah, and then he asked the clerk, he goes, where are they? He's asking the clerk, where are
they? Weren't there. And so what did he do, postpone it?
No, I said I want this case dismissed because the week before they had everything set up to take my house, and I got the letter that Sunday evening, like it was almost like hand-delivered. And so when I went to the court, I said, oh, wow. I said, so I went to the court, and I had my papers ready, and I said, he goes, well, we're here to make a motion to take the property. I said, well, how are you going to take the property when my house is paid for? And he has the copies of my deed. So he asked the attorney, he goes, did you know she had the deeds to her property? She goes, no, Your Honor. I said, yes, you did, because you both have copies of it. He goes, well, I got to review it. So that case, she went running out again. And this is the third time this happened. And the last time, I said, well, let me do, I would like to speak to Mr. GE Federal Credit Union and the other party. And I said, and I'm on such and such a date, at such and such a time, located. And I want a sworn affidavit from both parties and a copy of the contract that I had already taken out along with them. And no one showed up.
So did he dismiss it with prejudice?
Nope, he did not dismiss it, and he's the one who's been taking everybody's property. Also, I wrote, and you are nothing but a debt collector, to the attorneys, and I said, and I don't have no contract with them, and I said what you're doing is you're perpetrating a fraud. Because the money doesn't go to no one. It goes to the judge, and it goes to the attorney. And I guess because, like, on the East Coast here, this is, they're taking people's homes illegally, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, because they're going to be, like, millionaire properties. So
right.
They're just taking...
Well, I don't want to get into the case. Or
yeah. Yeah, and by the way, just to let you know, Gerard, 4 minutes.
Well, look, when you went in there and you said, I want to speak to this one and that one, that should have been in an official form, so that when they didn't answer it, then you could have went in and filed for a default.
Oh, then, excuse me, I made a mistake. It's 14 minutes. Sorry.
Oh, okay. You know, at that point, when they didn't show up, they're defaulted.
Okay, well, I had to pay $125 to have it reopened, and that's exactly what I'm going
to
do.
See, that's another problem.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, Gerard.
Well, no, I'm just saying, she doesn't have to pay anything to file for a default. It's under the same docket number, whatever you're working on.
Well, they made me, as a matter of fact, they took all my paperwork, and also,
So, first of all, that's a problem that a lot of people, you know, have a problem getting past, and I can understand how they have a problem getting past it, and that is filing a court case without paying money. Once you pay money, you're going into the fiction. And remember, this is a corporation, a fiction, suing you, a reality, okay? That's not possible in common law. Look, like you said, you want to see Mr. Bank of America? Mr. Bank of America needs to come down there. In common law, he better get down there. Otherwise, he's losing the case. And he better do an affidavit.
She didn't have to pay money because they're the ones that took her to court.
Yeah, but exactly. Now they're making her do it, pay money. For what purpose are they making you pay money?
And they made me do it on Friday.
For what? Why?
Because I said, no, I want a motion to reopen this. I go, because I said I'm fighting.
Oh, they want $40 for the motion, probably.
No, they want $125 for the motion.
Nah, they're full of. They don't even know what they're doing.
They know exactly what they're doing.
Well,
they've been doing it for a long time.
And I said, I want all your names. And then they, you know, I mean, it's just, it's so crazy. It was just like
this guy is such a criminal. He's stealing property, and while he's at it, he's going to pick your pocket, right?
Exactly. Well, that's what, you know what? Well, I'm going to get, I got my receipt because I want my $125 back.
Due process. You got a federal case. Conspiracy.
Put in notice of default because they didn't answer you and register the default with the clerk. And when you come back and say, Judge, I have a default on this case, it's over.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Do an affidavit of default. They didn't show. Hey,
look,
you got to go. The only way you're going to deal with this case, because they're just going to tag you along and along and along and along.
Right.
And just going to go endlessly. Look at, and why suffer so much?
I don't want to. I want to go over them
and sue them. Look at, they violated your unalienable right of due process. They took you into a foreign court. They hijacked you into a foreign court. And when the two of them did that together, because it's a game the lawyer and the judge is doing, they both know what they're doing, that became a conspiracy. So get them for conspiracy, coming under the common law, conspiracy for violating your unalienable right of due process.
Crystal,
and I'm sure there's a whole bunch of other rights that they violated.
You're not in the federal court, are you, Crystal?
I'm sorry?
No,
what court? You're not in the federal court, right? You're in a state court, right?
I'm in a state court, right.
Yeah, you're in the Supreme Court. So when John says sue them, he means take them into a federal court.
Right. You got to go to a federal court because only a federal court can hear a constitutional case.
Okay.
You
so
go
I
to, you move your case. You go open your case up there, and your cause is has to be a constitutional violation, and you go right to your due process right.
Okay. So I get, yeah, I
you don't even talk
that.
About the case. Don't even bring the case up because they'll...
Right. You're not arguing the case over in the federal court. The other case stays open because you're going to go back to court and you're going to tell the next judge what you want him to do, and he's got to do it. Either that or give me a jury and let's end this thing.
That's what I asked for, too. Okay.
Yeah. There's nothing else to talk about. You're not going to do a summary judgment on me. Your Honor, what are you doing? That's not common law.
Okay.
So, there, that's a whole lot of advice.
Yeah, no, because I gotta go back. As a matter of fact, I gotta go to court. There's a court observer tomorrow, because another person because I've been registering, you know, getting about 10 to 20 people a week to tune in and go on the National Liberty Alliance. So I gotta go to court tomorrow because a person, he had an automobile accident, and they want to put him in jail for 2 to 6 years. And nobody died in it. Supposedly somebody got hurt, but there was no record. And it's like another scam they're setting up. But I said, for an accident, you know?
Yeah.
So
well, that's what they do. They make money on people putting them in jail. That's why they do it.
Yeah. Okay, but
okay.
I got to be at court 9 in the morning. So I'll let you know we make it on that. Because I've been bringing people into court. So as court observers, you know, so like, and people are enjoying it because they're learning a lot.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're okay.
All right. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye bye.
I don't want to say it, but enjoy the ride. It's terrible.
Hey guys.
New York Mike.
Hi man. How are you? How's everything
good.
Going? Hey, I got a question. I went to the website to order some business cards, and it says that it's unavailable. How do we get business cards with our name on them and stuff?
That's under our services tab?
Yeah, I'm trying to get it to the mic here. Yeah, the problem
is
we've had 2 or 3 people who we're going to work things out with, and we've never got that off the ground. We did have someone that hammered out a basic site, you know, for working the business out, because, you know, we don't do the business cards. We want someone who does business cards and maybe, you know, what do they call them, for the bumper stickers and hats, maybe T-shirts and things like that.
Right.
And we need somebody, an entrepreneur, who does that for a living and would like to service us and work something out with us. And we've had 2 people back-to-back that offered to do it, and then it just fell through. It never came through. So anybody out there that's interested, that has that kind of business and would like to work with us to supply our members with those kind of things, we'd love to make a contract, an agreement of some kind, and work something out. You know,
okay,
we've done that with the food. We've done that with silver and gold. As a matter of fact, Paul, who passed away, some weeks ago. There is another, he had an associate. We need to make contact with that guy, Gerard, and get the silver back up again. So, but anyway.
How would they get a hold of you? Whoever would they get a hold of? I know a guy who did our band cards. He did a great job, and he was really reasonable.
Yeah, he can call me at 845-233-6560.
Okay.
And best time is probably afternoon, you know, Eastern time.
Okay, great. I'll get a hold of him and see if he can, if he'd like to take care of it. Because, yeah, we need some cards out here.
Yeah, we need somebody who's got web presence and can create a page for us, and we'll discuss with them different ideas. They'll come up with ideas. People will come up with ideas. And we'll put some nice things together because we could, you know, make a few bucks to help support our cause by selling T-shirts, business cards, and mugs, and different things like that, bumper stickers, you know.
Yep. We need stickers, window stickers, bumper stickers,
yeah,
and the cards.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's all I wanted. Let somebody else talk. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yep, bye-bye.
Yeah.
Now you got 6 minutes.
Okay.
What are you doing, Gerard? you hit that button again.
That's the other
six minutes. Get into the queue here.
quick, get in the queue. I'm using an on-screen keyboard because I broke my keyboard and it was over top of that thing. You can't play with anything on this.
Shame.
Okay, next question.
What are you doing?
I clicked on next question.
Really?
Why is it doing that?
I don't know. Get back into the queue, *6. Let me click it for you. Maybe.
Why is it? I don't get it. Maybe it doesn't.
First of all, you got to be. You're in lecture right now, so let me go. Maybe someone else is hitting buttons and they don't know that they're hitting buttons.
I don't know. When I hit next question, it said it's over.
Good. Try it now.
Okay, here we go. Next question. Okay, it opened up. I don't know who that is. It's just 0377. Go ahead.
It's me, right?
Yeah, it's you. Yes.
Okay. I got a statement and a question.
Okay.
I've been in contact with people out in Oregon. I have contact with their media rep out there, Lavoie Finnegan. So if I can be of any help along the way, just let me know.
What's your name? I don't have a name up here. And what state are you?
Gary Will. I'm a district coordinator in Illinois.
Okay, in Illinois, Gary Will. Okay, I'll make a note of that. Yeah,
that's the most positive word in the dictionary.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking to them, but if you know, we're looking for, you know, different people for help. Illinois, you're not real close. You're on the other side, right? So
yeah, I'm a ways away.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, I don't know what direction we're going to go in right now, but right now it's pretty hot. But at some point, as the case progresses, you know, we're gonna be having call outs and things like that. So just pay attention because that is not over by a long shot. And then right now we're in the thick of things, so, and we'll be, you know, if I need help with anything like that, we'll be sure to get a hold of you.
And I had initially contacted him several months ago and introduced him to NLA because he's having the same problem out in Arizona.
Right. Yeah, well, all those states. Arizona's no better.
No.
Nope. Yep.
And does Laura Laguerre work for NLA?
Laura, yes.
Okay, Laguerre. I got a question. There was a post on the web, I don't know whether it can be talked about, regarding CSPOA.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you mean? We've had some meetings with CSPOA, with the Sheriff Mack, recently.
Well, this is a very positive thing, and we put it on our Facebook pages.
Mm-hmm.
It was regarding training, and it looked like part of it came from Sheriff Mack, and it was listed as Blockbuster News, NLA to train United States constitutional sheriffs?
Well, you know, I don't know who put that out there, but
you know, we're talking to him about, we were talking about getting together, and we wanted to see his material, which he did send to some of us. And that ball is still hanging in the air, because as that happened, then the Hammond Bundy thing happened. And so we had to run over there and burn the midnight oil to get those papers out. So we haven't really made any decisions on that, and that's still in the works. So, you know,
okay.
We suggested to him, you know, we have the constitutional course and the civics course, and it would be nice if those sheriffs would come over and take that. I mean, look at, if they took those courses, I mean, the constitutional course, they should just go in and take it, because they'll know more about the Constitution than 99.9% of the sheriffs in America know. So they're welcome to do that. I mean, we offer that to everybody and anybody, and we would love if Sheriff Mack would put that down as a resource. Now,
I want to add something. Our constitutional course will not put you to sleep. I've taken constitutional courses that I've never completed because it just bored me to tears. And, you know, and they never get – and look, we put it right out there the way it is. We don't hold nothing back. This is what they're doing. This is what's happening. And we show the proof and move on. People should come and take our constitutional course, and we really hope that we can work something out with, what is it, COPA? Is that what the letters are?
Yeah, like constitutional.
Right.
Yeah, so we really hope that we can work something out with them, because we have a course that really is going to benefit this nation and benefit the people and benefit even the sheriff.
I agree, and it sounded like it was a done deal. That's why I asked the question.
It
could be discussed.
Maybe there's
not,
things that we don't know about. We should talk. Have you been involved with all of the meetings, Gerard, or what?
Well, I assume I have, unless there's been some since I went. I don't know how to tell you.
Going behind your back here.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I really don't know. We had some discussions with him, and he's got his idea about how to educate the sheriffs, and he thinks that we're giving too much meat to them, and they think we're crazy and blah, blah. So we still got some stuff to work out. I'm trying to get it to, you know, look at, the sheriffs need the jury and the people, and the people need the sheriffs. So it's a symbiotic relationship, and you're not going to have one without the other. And what people don't understand is we don't have grand juries sitting all over the place. We haven't done that. The only grand jury that's operating right now is the unified United States one that we're going into the courts with cases like the Bundys and the Hammonds. That one is in session, but everything else, we're just training people to be administrators to that jury and that grand jury.
And I'd like to say something about our course. An eighth grader could take our course and we'll walk out of there understanding the Constitution. So, yeah, it is kind of meaty, but it's not really meaty. You know, it's the Constitution, and it's simple. There's nothing, you don't have to be, a brain surgeon to read and understand the Constitution. You don't need a professor to explain it to you. Look, just read it and compare it to other things and get yourself a Black's Law Dictionary. In the difficult parts, you look up the meaning of words and all of a sudden things will open up to you. And you want to compare things with, the things in the Constitution with the Bill of Rights, which is part of the Constitution. And you also want, of course, the Declaration of Independence, which is the foundation of our Constitution. And you really have to look at liberty, you know, because you're looking at really jurisdiction and unalienable rights. Those are the two things: due process, jurisdiction, unalienable rights. The three things go together.
I might mention also, I've taken the introduction only, but it's an excellent, excellent presentation. I think you did an excellent job.
We appreciate
that.
Yeah. Hey, we've reached the end of our program here. Sorry, but we're going to end it now. Sorry if there's a couple of people left, and of course Gerard keeps kicking them out. I don't know. But anyway, appreciate everyone coming. Thanks, and Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday, same time, same phone number. We'll be right back.
you dream of a lost in the